Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Effen. It's Wendy Snyder. It's beautiful outside. It's just stunning.
It's finally happened.
So, I know.
You got a little tanned. Doing some tennis?
I was outside a lot. A lot of tennis. Yeah.
You're looking good.
Thank you. That's very, very nice of you. My goal is to be this generation's George Hamilton.
You know got that. A long way to go,
I have
dude.
A long way to go to that. I wonder if George Hamilton knew what we now know about the dangers of the sun, if he would have been perpetually tan for decades. Do you think?
I think you just want to be tan. There's a certain breed of person.
Right.
Snooki.
She enjoys being tan.
Although that's fake tan, and I'm fake tan, too. I use the lotion stuff.
Yeah.
L'Oreal Sublime, by the way, it works wonderfully.
That's your tan of choice?
Yeah, because unless I have a pool with a raft and mm-hmm. a pool boy and a drink, I can't I just can't lay out there anymore. I'm just bored.
I guess there's a time in your life where you justify it, but as you get older, you go, there's other things I could be doing.
It's just, I can't, right. I'm too restless to just relax. I'm unable to relax.
I'm so afraid because so many of my friends have had bouts of skin cancer, and it's ironic we're talking about this because this is going to come up later on in the show. We're going to talk about the dangers of skin cancer with a dermatologist.
It's Skin Cancer Awareness Month, May is, and it's almost over.
But I don't remember ever as a kid ever once putting anything on to protect myself from the sun. And, you know, my mom and dad were with me. I by today's standards, I think DCFS would have hauled me off. But back then, it was just...
Baby oil. That's what I put on. And talk about sunscreen? No way.
I know.
Remember the ladies that would lay out with the aluminum foil thing under their chin?
Yeah,
so they
reflectors?
Yeah.
Yeah, not anymore.
Yeah,
No. No.
And you should get, a full body check. Kevin just had one. But you should go to a doctor next time.
Right. Kevin just met somebody at the Target parking lot who said, I will check you for moles. That was awkward, Kevin.
They said they do it for free, though.
Yeah, I don't think you got the best.
Clean bill of health.
Yeah, I guess.
And you know what's weird? And we can talk about this with, I'll just wait till we talk to the dermatologist, Cheryl Hoyer. Just wait.
All right.
Because there's no sense in blowing it now.
Can I share with you a very strange episode from the weekend?
Yeah.
All right. My wife and I ate at a restaurant in Highwood that we've eaten at before. We enjoyed it very much. Our friend Dave Ennett first introduced us to this restaurant months ago. And we ran into Dave at the restaurant, ironically enough.
Wow. That's wild.
No, there's more to it. There's more to the story, believe it or not. A couple of tables away from us, it was a woman's birthday. So they did what you're supposed to do. It says it in the Bible. It's one of the commandments that if you go to a restaurant on your birthday, you have to tell somebody at the restaurant it's your birthday or somebody in your party's birthday so that they will bring you a free piece of
dessert,
cake of some sort.
A free dessert.
And they will sing a version
of... Happy birthday to you, singing happy.
Right.
Was it that one or the traditional?
It was not... Places shy away from the traditional because then they're supposed to pay royalties somehow.
That's free and clear now.
Oh, you can do it? Yeah. Is it public domain now? Okay. There was a version of Happy Birthday that was sung. The spectacle in this is not that it was a woman's birthday or that they brought her cake or that they sang her the song. The spectacle in this story is that there was a woman sitting behind us. There was a couple sitting behind us, and the woman was around 50 years old. And she had never seen anything like this before.
What?
Every part of this amazed her. Every part. She said to her husband, she goes, look, they're bringing that woman cake. You could hear her just so excited. And she goes, somebody must have told them that it's that woman's birthday and they're bringing her cake. And her husband's like, yeah, that's what they do.
Poor thing. Was this the first time she's eaten out in a restaurant?
I can't, the rest of my meal was spent trying to figure out, I wanted to go up and go, you've been out to eat before, right? This isn't the only place. Because she said at one point, they don't even know her. Those people don't even know that woman. And they're just all together singing a happy birthday song to her. It was, I marveled at her innocence.
Yeah.
But then I went, if this amazes you, what else? Like, just during the course of a day, what do you see that just throws you for a loop?
She's like an adult baby. You know, the first time a baby sees a light above their head or a ceiling fan.
Well, the best part was when the song was done and they had the cake and she just spent the rest of the night looking over at the table as if to say, if this could happen, what else could possibly happen? The sky's the limit. Anything can happen.
I'm feeling very sad, Miss Wendy backstory, sad backstory, because she's been out to dinner before, obviously, and no one in her party has ever told them it's her birthday.
Oh, I didn't
see. Leave Steve, it to me, Wendy Downer.
Wait a minute. Maybe her birthday is next month, and she's planting the seed.
Yeah, but if she acted like she never saw it before, right. She was in true amazement.
Don't you know people who are surprised by everything? I mean, I have a few friends or people I know who...
By something that's...
Oh, my, the light just turned red and the car stopped. Yeah, they're just always, oh, there's my sister there.
I guess I do know people like that.
Do you remember, I don't know if either of you remember this, but for a while on Saturday Night Live, Kristen Wiig did a character that couldn't keep a secret. You know, they would tell her they were going to have a surprise party for somebody, right. And then she could not keep a secret.
She tried.
This lady was like a real live version of this. The excitement, the jubilation, the pageantry that went on in this woman's eyes as she watched these strangers singing Happy Birthday, even though it's part of their job description, I think. I don't think they volunteered to just come up and sing Happy Birthday.
Right.
They say,
and isn't
when
it
you,
weird they know her name because right. somebody yells it out?
Right.
Like as right. the Happy Birthday begins, somebody goes, Donna.
Right. She was just, she could, like, you know, for years to come, this will be a story. When she meets people, she'll go, one night, my husband Ed and I are in a restaurant, and these people just sang happy birthday to a woman and brought her cake.
That's pretty sweet, though.
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. All right, we have to take a break, and then more show is coming. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I saw the whole morning news crew at Dean Richards' awards ceremony for the Silver Circle Award. You've messed me up.
Say Silver Surfer.
No,
it's such
I have,
a, yeah.
Thanks to you.
All right.
But the whole morning show team was there.
Were they?
Just to support him. And Jay Levine spoke, Marianne Childers, all these people won awards. Tim Weigel posthumously.
Yeah.
And Jen Weigel did a great job, and Teddy and Vicky Truax.
Oh, nice.
But I have to tell you, I was feeling jealous of all the recipients.
Jealous because why?
They all had living parents.
Oh.
I'm an orphan.
Oh.
And their parents are 90, and I think Jay Levine's dad is like 100. And I was like...
Was Jay Levine's dad there? That's fantastic.
Everybody had parents in their 90s and up.
Wow.
And I'm like...
That's impressive.
I looked at Jim and I said, great for them, but it sucks for me. Just for a minute, I felt sorry for myself.
But in this particular instance, you were not accepting an award. I mean, when,
I know,
it, when it's your day to get your
they'll
award,
they'll still be dead.
They will still not be in attendance. You're right.
But it was really
did
like
you
a
talk to Jay Levine's
moment.
Dad about coming to yours and go, look, Mr. Levine, I want you and Avril, when I get my award, I want you guys to come to my ceremony. Did you say that?
No, but I should have.
You should have.
That might have pushed him
down.
Over the edge, though.
Oh, maybe. Maybe.
You better win it tomorrow.
Oh, no.
But it was, it just, it really proved to me just everybody's living so much longer and in a good way.
Right.
I mean, you know, when we were younger and someone was 90, they looked 90.
Yeah.
They don't really anymore.
Yeah. It's true, isn't it?
It's pretty amazing. So congrats to Dean Richards. That was a wonderful award.
And I bet, and I'm not doing this to rub it in, but I bet part of the thrill of winning an award like that is probably having a parent or two there to cheer you on.
Do you see why I got a little...
Yeah, I guess I can now.
Sorry for myself?
Yeah. Sad news from the world of Hollywood, and that is that Alan Young died over the weekend. Alan Young is the man who played Wilbur Post. Hello.
I'm Mr. Ed.
He was on Mr. Ed. He was the owner of Mr. Ed.
And now Wilbur would say, hello, I'm dead. Too soon?
I think it's too soon.
Actually, about 10 years ago, he changed his middle name to Not So.
Not So Young. Alan Not So Young.
I like it.
I always thought about, with Mr. Ed, you know, the process of getting a television show on the air is you come up with an idea and then you have to pitch that to producers and then they pitch that to networks. They say to the network, here's our idea for a show. And I always wondered what that meeting would be like as you go, the premise here is a simple one, CBS. It's a horse that talks, because then you say, well, that'll be good for an episode or two. But Mr. Ed was on for 5 years.
It's pretty trippy for back then, don't you think? A talking horse?
It was when that era of television was a weird era because almost every show was looking for just a gimmick. that's kind of a, it was a gimmick-based generation of television, like the Beverly Hillbillies or My Favorite Martian or the Munsters or the Addams Family. What you needed to do is sell them on some sort of a gimmick premise, and Mr. Ed sounds ridiculous. Like, if you headed up a network and a guy came in and goes, talking horse, do you go, so, eh. What, Steve?
Yeah.
I apologize, my mistake.
Oh, that's all right. I thought Steve was mad. Like, I just came up with an idea for a talking horse. You're stealing it.
My mic was on. I was about to have a high-level conversation about a news story here.
Oh, okay.
You want to hear it?
No, that's all right.
Good.
Later during the news.
Yeah, that seems like bizarre for the time, but now it's like, you know, you could have a talking anything.
Yeah, I guess so.
But then, and it was amazing how Mr. Ed, I know he didn't really talk, okay?
Right.
But it, you know, the
spoiler
lips
alert.
Moved and... It was.
You
pretty,
bought it.
You did.
Right? No, but I wonder because it was on when we were kids.
Yeah.
I have not seen an episode of Mr. Ed in quite a while. I wonder if I'd be as tolerant of Mr. Ed when it was on. Also, his wife Carol was very attractive.
That's why you watched.
That's part of the reason I watched.
That was her real voice.
Right.
They didn't dub it in.
They didn't have Rocky Lane, the cowboy star,
right,
dubbing in her voice, just the horse's voice. The other thing about Alan Young is, aside from being in Mr. Ed, he's in one of my favorite movies of all time, and it was on Family Classics. See if you know the movie. There's time travel involved.
Yeah, I totally know the movie. Yeah.
He's, I think his name is Philby in The Time Machine. And then he was in the remake of The Time Machine a couple years ago also. But I always thought it was kind of cool that he was in that movie because everybody knew him from Mr. Ed. And I still don't remember which came first, if The Time Machine came first or Mr. Ed. They had to be about the same time.
Because they were about the same age.
Yeah.
He looked almost identical to the Mr. Ed days.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, there's something we missed. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you today?
We're good. How are you? You have another talking animal?
I'm calling from where the world famous championship Green Bay Packers play up here. I'm in Green Bay.
And, I almost hung up on you.
I'm sorry. Well, we have a wonderful Hall of Fame if you ever want to visit. Anyway, Mr. Ed was just a ripoff of a talking animal. There was a very famous four-legged mule.
Francis.
That had movies, right.
Francis the Mule.
Mule movies.
Yeah.
So she
made an ass out of herself.
It was Donald O'Connor, right, in the Francis movies?
It sure was.
Yeah.
And you were okay as long as you fed the right end on that. But so anyways, I just thought I'd poke that up. I don't think that horse was such a big deal. All he could do was stand there and move his lips. This mule did a lot of stuff if you watch an old movie.
Right.
Like what? Give me an example of what else she did besides talk.
Well, Francis worked. I mean, Francis did poses and walked around in the movies and hauled things and
far more ambitious
shoulder muscles and
yeah, but every mule does that. Every mule hauls stuff.
Well, yeah, but this was a movie mule, not a horse mule.
Yeah, Wendy, come on.
Wendy, WGN years ago, they even had a TV show with a talking elephant and Uncle Somebody.
They did.
The elephant was a big puppet behind a just like the horse.
Okay, but that's a puppet. Jim, you're deluding this.
Mr. Ed wasn't real, was he? Mr. Ed wasn't real.
He was a horse.
No, horses don't talk.
Don't ruin it for me, Jim, and thanks for confusing me.
That's okay. You know what we say when we say goodbye? We say, go Packers.
Yeah. Go Packers.
Love you guys.
All right.
Bye.
Love you. And then we say, bite me.
Right.
He's a Packer fan. Come
legally,
on.
You're supposed to say that at the end. All right, we need to take a break. And then Steve has the news story that Steve just teased. You're going to hear in more complete. It's coming.
The tease. The tease was so.
It's coming. You'll hear more next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I believe May is National Skin Cancer Awareness Month.
All right,
yeah, Steve? Oh, my God. I'm turning his microphone off. We have Dr. Cheryl Hoyer in the studio with us. She's been up before. She's a dermatologist for North Shore University Health System and the University of Chicago. Thank you for coming back.
Thank you for having me again. I was here last year, and it was so much fun. So thank you.
I mentioned Bill got some color this weekend, and
uh-oh,
you were out playing tennis,
yeah,
and you're looking tan.
Yeah.
You tan pretty easily.
I do
you wear sunscreen?
More times than not, I do. I can't say every time, but if I know I'm going to be out in the sun, I absolutely do.
And so you probably know from talking to me before, at least, if not other people, that a tan is damaged. It's not protecting. And we would say to wear sunscreen every day, to start your day with a lotion with sunscreen.
Yeah.
And then when you're really outside, reapply. But if you're starting your day with it, then it won't happen where you're outside and realize, oh shoot, I'm not prepared. So yeah.
Women have it easier because we have sunscreen built into our makeup,
and that probably helps. I don't know that we get the full SPF out of it because we don't put it on thickly enough. But yeah, and usually in our lotion too. So you're right. Women get a little more used to that
for everyday use, though.
Yeah, probably incidental. Right. We do get a little more used to that. So
and
yeah.
What happens is there's lasting damage too, right?
Right.
You'll notice as you get older, your skin starts to wrinkle up.
Right, you look like a baseball mitt.
Yeah, right. I don't want
right.
to.
Right. Well, the UVA rays, you can think of A for aging. A rays go deeper, and they break down collagen and elastin. And like you said, that causes wrinkling, sagging, all the bad things.
Yeah.
And like I said, even the tan is doing that. A lot of people, I think the thought is changing, or people are more aware, but especially in the past, people used to think the tan was protective, but it's not. It's maybe an SPF 4, so barely, you know, it's really not protection, and it's already damaged.
Oh,
so,
bad.
Yeah, so it's
all
already right. breaking down that collagen and elastin, as well as contributing to skin cancer. So.
It's sad because when you have a tan, you look so healthy. It's really false advertising.
Right. But I always say, learn to love the skin you were given, the
right.
color you were given. You know, there's beautiful, very fair models and actresses and beautiful dark ones. So, yeah, I don't know where that idea came from, that it's healthier, that we like that
it's
look.
Slimming.
Because we know.
Is that what it is?
It is slimming.
Yeah.
Maybe. But how about a dark, sun protective shirt? That could be slimming.
True. Yeah. And I use the fake tan stuff.
Yeah, that's fine. It is safe. It's just binding to the upper layers. So it's not giving you any protection, but it
right.
is safe. If you can't learn to love the skin you were born in, yes, you can do that. but as long as you don't breathe it in, yeah. I mean, you know, that would be the only thing.
But one of the alternatives, as you know, to just being outside and getting a tan that way is to go to like a tanning bed place, a salon.
No,
you don't
right,
want to do
exactly.
that, do you?
No, that's more damaging.
It is?
Actually,
yeah.
more A rays. So A and B. A, aging, like we said. B, burning. They both contribute to skin cancer. But yeah, it's more damaging. In fact, in women in their late 20s, melanoma, the life-threatening cancer, is the most common cancer and the most common death from cancer. And we think a lot of that is from those teenage tanning beds.
Really?
So yes, not at all that. No, that's
worse. I know
worse.
They keep making the rules for those a little more stringent. It used to be you could go an unlimited time as often as you want, and
right.
now they've limited all that.
Well, and most states have now passed laws prohibiting minors from doing it.
Right.
It's like smoking. You wish you could get rid of it, but at least if you're protecting our young. I was part of getting it passed in Illinois.
Oh, good.
And now I think they're talking about doing it countrywide, you know, the FDA just doing that. So yes, they're trying to regulate it more.
Good.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Because you look at all these teenagers and they're all so tan
right.
in the middle of winter
right.
because
yeah.
they like the look.
Yeah, yeah. If they could just do the spray tans or the the self-tanners,
that's
that would be
better.
A better way to do
yeah.
it. Yeah,
okay.
yeah, much safer.
All right. It is National Skin Cancer Awareness Month. May is running out.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good time to go get a full body check at a dermatologist. I'm going to do it probably in June because I don't think I can get in. I have a redhead who is 17 today. Happy birthday, Michael. And since the day he was born, I looked into sunscreen. Don't you wait till a baby is a year old? You're not supposed
to
use...
6 months, they say, just because their surface area is so much larger than their body, so they're absorbing more.
And they
so
get slippery if you have that oil on them. You could drop them.
Yeah, true.
You're right.
I know.
Keep them in the shade. So,
right.
But having a redhead, all I did was slather him with sunscreen when he was growing up.
Good.
My son Dylan, darker skin, so I still put sunscreen on him, but our dermatologist said he's the one we should check more because, is there any truth to that?
I do see that a lot. Some of the fairest skinned people are the least sun damaged because they learned early on it's no fun. They get burnt. They can't get brown anyway. And any medium skin or darker, they think, oh, I'm fine. And so it's cumulative. So yeah, they often have more damage. So, well, I would say everybody should know their skin, watch their skin for changes, but But that's an interesting point.
Bill and I were talking about using no sunscreen when we were growing up, mm-hmm. and I used baby oil, and there's been several vacations, one to St. Lucia, that I remember specifically that I was completely burned. Now, do earlier burns in your life have something to do with developing skin cancer later on?
We do think so. I mean, I've heard people say, is melanoma more those intense burns rather than just a chronic sun damage accumulation? It's hard to know. Maybe there's something to that, but certainly it's all cumulative as far as any skin cancer and for damage. But your body does try to repair damage of any sort. So, you know, a smoker who stops smoking, your body will try to repair, and the skin will do that too. We never know our body's ability to do that, but give it a chance. If you keep adding damage, it's just not going to. So, you know, if you're good with protection, you could be overcoming some of that.
I have one question. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about proper sunscreens, because we all have a lot of questions as to what's the best. Do you have to buy new ones every year? We'll talk about that in a second. But if you you had mentioned something about these halo moles, they're, your body kind of reabsorbs them. Do you think that maybe developing melanoma on the outside is kind of portraying some kind of cancer that's already on the inside, and it's like a warning sign to us, like, go get checked?
I don't know how much of a warning sign it is, but you're right that it's interesting how the whole body acts together. So a halo mole is where you have a mole that looks pretty normal, and then it develops a halo of white around it, and then eventually even the color of the mole goes away. So most of these are fine, but there is a thought. Could this be someone with a melanoma hidden somewhere else, or some other abnormal mole that the body is trying to attack and is attacking this as well? So it is interesting. Your body does try to fight off cancers and other things. So yes, you should take any unusual thing as a possible warning. Yes.
And so call your dermatologist. Dr. Cheryl Hoyer is a dermatologist for North Shore University Health System, if you're in the area, and the University of Chicago. We are going to come back and find out everything we need to know about sunscreen, because I think we're finally turning the corner and it's going to be warm for at least a couple of days this summer.
Let's hope so. More after this, Bill and Wendy, WGN. It is Skin Cancer Awareness Month, and Dr. Cheryl Hoyer, who is a dermatologist for the North Shore University Health System, is here to tell us what we need to be looking for. Let's go specifically when you're looking at you're in a drugstore or a pharmacy and you see all these products. What should we be looking for?
It is confusing, but the FDA has made it easier recently. So we talked about UVA and UVB rays. We have to block both. We want broad spectrum. Before 2012, though, all we had as a measurement or a guide on the bottle was the SPF. The SPF measures how much longer we can be in the sun before burn. So burn is UVB rays. Didn't say anything about UVA rays. So before 2012, I told patients to look for an SPF of 15 or 30. Then I had to tell them certain ingredients to look for that blocked UVA rays. That's really complicated to remember ingredients and to look at the small print for ingredients. But since 2012, the FDA has implemented some regulations. Previously, no regulations on sunscreens. So now they've done two major things. They've done a few things. But the two things that I think are most helpful, one is they've defined and regulated the term broad spectrum. So now I tell patients to look for an SPF of 15 or 30 and the words broad spectrum. Then they've gone one step further. So I tell patients, to look for the SPF and broad spectrum. But the FDA now allows bottles that have both of those things to have a certain line. So you can either look for that or you can look for this line. Now, I am putting on my glasses to read the line because it's small print, but it's under uses. So remember to look for uses. It's a long line. First of all, it says helps prevent sunburn. They can all say that. But if it covers both bases, UVA and UVB, it can say, if used as directed with other sun protection measures, we can talk about that, decreases the risk of skin cancer and early skin aging caused by the sun. So they can put that line there. Now I'm picking up another bottle that is SPF 4 and doesn't say broad spectrum. If I look for that line under uses, it doesn't have it. So whatever is easier for you, looking for SPF 15 or 30 plus broad spectrum, or looking, I see you're picking up a bottle there that I brought. I happen to know offhand whether that's good or bad, but on the back under uses, they all can say helps prevent sunburn. Does it have that other
line? The skin cancer line. You want about decreases aging the risk of skin cancer.
Yeah.
But here's the problem.
Does it say
it's
that?
It's so much. There's so much written on the back of this bottle. And also the other thing to complicate it. So the kind of bad ones also have to have a warning, kind of like cigarettes. It's a long one too. And again, I have these glasses on because I can't possibly read it. But you're right. That's all. And they have a warning about spending time in the sun. I'm not even going to read it verbatim, but causes skin cancer and early aging. So they must have that warning like cigarettes. But again, it's hidden. You're right. And it's in small print. But you can do that. If you look under uses and it has that long line, it's a good one. If it's just prevents sunburn, it's not good. But I think it's easier to do what I first said, to look for the SPF 15 or 30. We prefer 30.
Right.
Plus the words broad spectrum. Does that say broad spectrum on the back?
I don't see the words broad spectrum.
Look on the front, because that they're going to try to...
Broad spectrum SPF 30.
So that's good.
And there's also a box that says recommended skin cancer F active. What does that mean? Any idea what that means?
No, look, I didn't see that one. Where are you seeing that?
Show that to Dr. Hoyer.
There's some sort of a very official-looking symbol.
I have to tell you. Yes, I am sorry about that. Yes, that is also another way to tell.
Okay.
The Skin Cancer Foundation will put a seal on ones that cover both, too.
Yeah.
So it's two different organizations, the FDA and the Skin Cancer Foundation.
Okay.
You're absolutely right.
Good.
So it's a logo that says Skin Cancer Foundation and has what you said in it. Yes, so that is one other way. Thank you.
Boy, you know, when you bought stuff before, you're just saying 15 or 30.
Mm-hmm.
They have 100.
Yeah, and now we hope that might be the next step, that the FDA might cap it at 50, because 15 blocks 93% of the rays, 30 blocks 97% of the rays, and, you know, going to 50 is 98%. So you see, we went from 97% to 98% between 30 and 50. So after 50, it's really no
different. A waste of money.
It's a waste of money is what I say. It's not damaging to you, but could be damaging to the wallet. Yes. But actually, it could indirectly be damaging, because a lot of people, I think, if they get an SPF 75 or 100, they think, I am really good now. But they're really not any better off than anybody else. Then they still need to reapply it and do all the other measures. You may have saw I came in with a visor on this beautiful sunny day. You know, you can't just say I have a little sunscreen on and know you're good. It's not perfect. It gets sweated off and you know,
and
you didn't put
swimming.
It on. Yeah, and you didn't put it on as thickly as you should. So plop on the hat or the visor, the sunglasses, the sun protective shirts, like I said. I really do think they're slimming and make me look athletic.
Bundle up for the beach, people.
Yeah, right. do as much as you can, because any one thing isn't perfect. So, you know.
Is there an expiration date on these?
There is. There is an expiration now. Yeah. That is a good question. If you can't find it, I tell people 2 years, but the expiration actually goes 3 years. So usually it goes 3 years. So again, that was something that wasn't as regulated before. So it is hard to find in all this small print. There's an expiration date on here? On some of them, it might be on the outer packaging. So if you can't find it on your bottle, just go with 2 years, because you don't know how long it sat on the shelf.
Well, here's the thing. You don't know how long you've had it when you bring your pool bag out for the year.
So isn't it
cheap enough to just buy a fresh one every year?
You shouldn't have any left from last year. You should have used it all up.
Yeah, I didn't.
But if you do have some left, if you can't remember when you bought it, if it's possible, it's real, throw it out. But if you think you just bought it a year ago, again, you can give it 2 years unless it says. If it says, you know, then you can go buy that.
Is there a brand that you highly recommend, or a brand that you say, stay away from this at all costs?
No, actually not now. Since 2012, before that, again, I would say SPF 30 and look for one of these UVA ingredients. It was hard to remember these chemical names. So sometimes I would just resort to giving brand names.
Yeah.
But nowadays, no, SPF 30. Broad spectrum, you're covered,
you
and I just get the cheap big box store generic.
Yeah.
So generic doesn't make any difference from brand name.
Yeah, don't waste your money. Whatever you like on yourself, and that's subjective, how it feels on you and how it smells. If you don't like it, you're not going to use it. So you do have to personally like it, but does it
what
need
about
to be a lot of
spray
money?
Versus lotion?
I don't love spray, but technically you could use it correctly. But I feel people put it on like bug spray. They just do a little light. Oh, I'm good. You still have to put it on thickly. It's not magical. It's not like Hogwarts potions class or something.
Boy,
no, you know, just a little bit and you're okay.
It is
easier. You're going to put it on thickly.
With kids, you know, they don't want to sit around while you.
So if it's easier, then there is benefit to that, because if they're going to do it. So you got to weigh all those factors.
But spray it thickly.
Well, I mean, put it thickly, yeah. But if it makes them use it, you know, that's better than not using it at all. But where I find a spray helpful is for the part of the hair. You know, if you're wearing a hat, well, then you're okay. But a lot of times I'll do visors. Those just seem to work better for me. So then I'll do a little spray sunscreen in the part of my hair so I don't miss that.
The actual part can get sunburn.
Yeah, it does. And it hurts. Skin cancer. It would be very embarrassing if I got a skin cancer there.
It
so
would be the worst thing for you
professionally. Yeah, right. I can't die of a skin cancer because no. I never live it down.
Don't do it.
All right, well, we've learned something. 15 and 30, preferably 30, but that is so good to know. Anything above 30, you're not really giving yourself added protection.
Above 50.
Above 50. I mean, yeah, right? 50 gives you a little more than 30, but
1%
not.
More.
Yeah,
that's
not,
it. That's
yeah,
the difference.
And after 50, no, really nothing. Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank
this
you.
Is great. And,
yeah.
and just really quickly, how often should people get checked, have their body checked? Is that a once a year
we
thing or more?
We think yearly is nice. I have to admit, we don't have a lot of studies that really prove for healthy people without risk factors should everyone come yearly. There is a study in Germany where they did show that to be true.
Yeah.
So if we can extrapolate to that to everybody, then we have it. But we intuitively think, it's good to be looked at yearly. If you think your primary care doctor is doing that and you're young and don't have risk factors, that might do it. But certainly a dermatologist is a great idea.
Right.
And certainly with any risk factors, 50 and over, I definitely think then we have more argument for that.
And if you go to somebody yearly, you can see any changes that have happened. You're well aware of the body map, you know, that
exactly.
looks like...
You can do mole mapping where there are a bunch of pictures, but even when we don't do that, we sometimes will take just individual pictures or at least our charting and our measurements. You're right. You have that comparison.
All right. I'm making my appointment today for everyone in the family, the redhead and everyone else, because really people who, like you tan very well.
Mm.
I tan, but it takes me really long.
Mm.
I can just have the same amount of problems as he does. So
it
just varies.
Or he could have more because he hasn't been as cautious.
I'm taller
than,
and I'm closer to the sun. So
that too.
Right?
Yeah, right.
Okay. All right. Cheryl, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Really appreciate
thank
it.
You.
That's Dr. Cheryl Hoyer from North Shore University's health system. Back after this, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy here on WGN. We invite you to call in or text in anytime you want. 312-981-7200 is the number. Speaking of things that aren't safe for you, we were just talking about the sun not being safe. That's obvious. Skin cancer. Although it's always strange to me that another planet could kill you. Isn't that strange when you stop thinking about it?
The sun is not a planet.
What is it again?
A star.
A star. A star could kill you.
Get Lucianne Walkowitz on the show, Kevin, please.
Every day. here's something else that may not be good for you, but I'm not shocked by this. I don't think anyone will be shocked by this. Gas station food may not be that safe, Wendy. Hard to believe.
The hot dogs on the rollers?
Yes. Yes. The hot dogs on the rollers, the burritos that have been there.
The chicken, I think they have a buffalo chicken. It looks like almost like an egg roll.
Right.
They're good.
I'm amazed. There's a couple places by me, and the prices amaze me. You can get three hot dogs for a dollar. Something's not right if you can get three of anything
three?
For a dollar. Yeah, there's a gas station by me that has three hot dogs for a dollar.
Where could you
I
give
don't know
me the address?
In them.
I'm
no.
going to stop there after the
I'm
show.
I'm going to save your life and not give you the address. I was trying to think when I read the story this morning. I was trying to think of the last time I had food. And when I say food from a gas station, I don't mean like Reese's peanut butter cups that are. I mean
warm hot food.
Warmed hot food
from the grill.
From the grill, if you will, and I won't. I think it's probably been since I was in college since I've had gas station food, quote unquote. So here are the reasons that the president, Francine Shaw, the president of Food Safety Training Solutions,
What's
has found.
That? That's not a government.
The FSTS? You know, the FSTS.
I think they made me take my shoes off.
Right. Right. Long lines at the gas stations to get food. Here are some of the reasons, some of the. Hold on, I'll go to the back page. Over 700 reasons.
Oh, get out. Really?
No, there's not that many.
This doesn't
four
count
pages.
Like 7-Eleven, does it? Like convenience store food or just
I
gas
wonder
stations?
If that fits the bracket or not.
Because
technically, I think it does, doesn't it?
I don't make a habit of it, but there are sometimes...
What'll you get at a 7-Eleven?
I got a buffalo chicken roll-up. Thing that was on the
and
hot dog
seemed,
machine.
It seemed to be okay. It seemed good.
It tasted fine.
Tastes all right.
I was somewhere out and I didn't have time to stop. I had an appearance somewhere, so I just said, "Oh, I'll take one of those." And you know when Michael and I went to see Bob Dylan last year, we wanted to go out to eat and we were running too late and didn't have time,
and
so
took
we
him to
walked
the Sitco.
We walked to the 7-Eleven and we got those.
Oh. Wow, a night out with you, and the sky's the limit.
I know.
All right, so here are some of the reasons, and on each one of them, feel free to use the word duh after I tell you.
All right, duh.
Poor employee hygiene could be a contributing factor. It says food handlers should wash their hands and then put on gloves. Long hair should be restrained in ponytails, caps, and hairnets. Long beards in beard nets.
What?
I didn't know a beard net existed. If I saw somebody in a beard net, I'd run the other way, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing. Ideally, food handlers should wear aprons. Do they do that at the Texaco by you? Do they wear aprons?
No, and this is like people at food stores don't always adhere to this. My favorite is when you get a guy who puts the rubber gloves on
right.
and he rings you up and right. makes the sale. Like, right. why right. wear the gloves?
I think it's a law that they have to wear the gloves, but at some point the gloves become unusable.
And
you got oil on them.
Well, yeah, because you take the gloves off after you make the sandwich, then you touch the money in the cash
right,
register.
Right.
If you just leave the gloves on, plus your lunch meat tastes like rubber.
There's that. Although at least it's some taste. Now, that fits into number two, multitasking employees. Studies show none of us are great at multitasking, and there's a special risk when food service workers switch from making food to handling money or mopping out back. They often forget to wash their hands in between. I don't know how clean. I mean, with all due respect to the good people working there, I don't know that they are washing their hands after each of these tasks.
Yeah,
my guess is maybe not.
Guys, I am not just blaming a gas station attendant. I'm blaming people. I mean, there's been times I've been at a fast food sandwich place.
Yeah.
And again, the glove thing drives me nuts. So
right.
that bothers me.
Yeah.
And when did they change their glove? Like, at least change it for each sandwich.
Yeah, I don't think they do.
No, they leave it on all day.
Right.
And have you ever been in a place where you sit in there to eat and all of a sudden they start mopping the floors?
Yeah.
Like, while you're there with this, like, pine saw?
I know.
It's, like, intoxicating.
I know.
Like, really? I'm eating.
I've seen that more than once. I don't know how they don't know that's not a good idea, that the timing is, I mean, I know it's their shift and they have to have a certain amount of things done by a certain time, but
it's overpowering.
I know.
And that's food places
right.
that are doing this. It's not just gas station attendants.
I know.
I think they're getting a bum rap.
Right. Right. And the bum wraps are 79 cents each. You can't beat that price, can you? It says cold foods are oftentimes not cold enough. Perishable items like cold sandwiches, yogurt, cheese, eggs, and so on are required to be kept at a constant temperature of 41 degrees Fahrenheit or colder to prevent harmful pathogens from growing. If there's a thermometer in the cooler, make sure that it says 39 degrees or colder, which will keep the items in at 41 degrees or colder. So I guess they're allowing in for just the surface air to mix in, and that's the difference of your 2 degrees.
Can I ask you a quick question, though?
Yeah, sure.
If you see a little egg salad sandwich in the plastic container
right.
that's refrigerated, or you see a hot dog on the little roller spit,
yeah.
if that was like, there's no other food, it's a zombie apocalypse, that's the only thing left, what are you going
hot
for?
Hot dog every time.
Okay, yeah. Because
right.
at least you figure the heat will
yeah.
take care of it.
Right. We lie to ourselves.
Whatever.
I'm sure the hot dog is safe. 3 for $1.
What if it was a sandwich I made and a hot dog on a roller or the egg salad sandwich?
And the,
Still
and the hot dog and the egg salad sandwich are on the floor? I would go...
Oh, are you a jerk?
I would go...
Just wait. Someday you'll be hungry and I'll be the only one that has food.
You didn't hear my answer, hot dog. If there isn't a thermometer, make sure that they feel nice and cold to the touch. That's always fun. You just stand there and you just squeeze the sandwiches for about 20 minutes.
And then someone else is going to buy the sandwich you just squeezed
right.
that you made warm with
right.
your palm.
I tell them, this is pre-squeezed. You want this one? I already squeezed it. Yeah, I'll take that one. Better yet, choose items that are as close to the cooling elements as possible, often near the bottom or near the back. That's a trick of the trade, by the way. Anytime you're in a place with unlimited or seemingly unlimited food, get the ones that are freshly made. They're in the back. That makes sense.
I feel so guilty because every time I go to the Jewel or Mariano's, you know, say you're getting bagel bites, I will grab the box way in the back,
yeah.
and it messes up their beautiful
yeah,
display.
I know. But you're getting fresher ones.
Yep.
All right, there's more of these. The food you're eating at a gas station may not be safe. Yes, it's a shocker. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Oh, sure, the food at the gas station looks delicious, and it smells fantastic. But is it that good for you? That's the question they asked over at the FSTS, the Food Safety Training Solutions Center. Francine Shaw is the president. She lists multiple reasons why if you want to live longer, maybe eating in a gas station is not in your best interest. What are your thoughts? 312-981-7200. That's our call and text line.
All right. Hi, Corey.
Hi, how you doing?
We're good. How are you?
Okay. I got a couple of them. One time I was watching American Iron Chef, and they zoomed in on one of the chef's hands, and he had hairy knuckles. And I was thinking he needed to mask for his hairy knuckles. And then another one, that Guy Fieri, right?
Fieri, Guy Fieri.
He never takes his rings off. One time I seen him mushing up hamburger with his rings on. Yeah. Have you ever taken a ring off and seen what's underneath the ring?
Yeah.
That's not good either.
And then I got one more. One time I was getting a mug at a coffee place, and I used to get, so I was like, oh, I need a new mug. So I got a new mug, and they filled it up, and I used to get chocolate chunks or whatever with my coffee. So as I'm driving down the road, I'm drinking, I'm like, well, this is a big chocolate chunk. I started twirling around my mouth. It was a giant green fly.
Corey, how do you ever eat again after all this?
Well, that's the thing. I try not to. I try not to eat out, because anytime I get bad experiences.
Oh, that's terrible. Awful. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Corey.
Thanks for ruining our lunch.
The hat trick of ugly food stories.
Oh, that's terrible. Somebody said, best panini in Italy, auto stops off the highways.
That can't be true. In Italy, the best panini in all of Italy would be at an auto stop off the highway?
That's what 847 is telling us.
That can't be right.
Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Bill and Wendy, and your Kevin is always great. But
thank you.
I just wanted to say your name, didn't you, Kevin?
No, twice. Yeah. if I do it three times, everybody will learn it.
Yeah, you'll never forget your own name.
Absolutely. All right. So I want to put a positive spin on it, and some of this is directed toward Bill. So if you go and get some things from a gas station, if you have a lower GI, like a gastrointestinal tract, issue.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
That will
constipation.
That
is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Thank you, Wendy. Yep. I didn't want to say
Why
that
you
on
guys
your
grow
show.
Up?
Yep.
I highly respect you. I didn't want to say that on your show. So if that becomes a problem, if you order like a cheeseburger in a roll or like a Mexican burrito in a roll,
sure,
it's gonna be a quick remedy. And Bill, what I do is if I have an afternoon, tennis match.
Yeah.
What I'll do is I'll go to the gas station early in the morning because I don't want to leave the court.
Of
and,
course.
You'll have to. Yeah, because you're limited on that.
Right.
Right.
I get it.
So you go, you eat that stuff for breakfast. You're all cleaned out by the time you get on the court, and all is good.
It sounds foolproof to me, Kev. It really does.
It's problem solving your middle name.
Absolutely. So you put it in. You put it into you, so you don't have to leave the court, Billy.
All right. I like it.
Have a great,
thank you, Kevin.
Have a great
you too.
Day. Bye.
You too.
Later, Kevin. So they put the gas in gas station?
Pretty much.
The food?
Yeah, that's why it's called a gas station. moisture is the enemy, as it turns out, Wendy. For example, if there is any condensation dripping from a refrigeration fan or on the inside of a cooler that's not cold enough, it's a food safety concern. Excessive moisture provides the perfect environment for bacteria to thrive and mold spores will grow. You could say that, though, about any place that has food. That's not just for gas stations. That's a grocery store. That's a restaurant. That's any place, right?
That's when you get foggy mold.
Yeah, right.
And you're right. I think the gas station is getting picked on right now because this is any convenience store and some restaurants, too.
Right. Packaged foods may rule. That's what I'm saying. If you're in a gas station, you absolutely need food right then and there. Get something that's
Get corn nuts. Corn nuts is the corn nuts and a squirt.
That's your
to
combination.
To me, that is the perfect road food.
Absolutely. If you spot signs like the above, that's the moisture, but you're on a road trip and desperate for some food, packaged snacks may be the best way to go. Of course, Dr. Oz and others often tell you to eat fewer packaged foods, but in this case, the short-term health impact of possible food poisoning is more pressing than the long-term ones that accompany processed foods. I have a feeling if you called a gas station, like if I did that $3 for $1 hot dogs deal, and I called the gas station and said, hey, I had your hot dogs, and now my stomach hurts really bad, don't you think they'd say, you just bought 3 hot dogs for $1. What did you expect to have happen?
Can I tell you what the problem is? The hot dog is not the problem. It's on the roller grill and it's staying hot.
Yeah.
The problem is when you go to put the condiments on,
yeah.
those onions have been sitting
yeah,
out there forever.
Know.
Who knows who's like, you know, done a farmer's blow into them.
No.
You're touching
no.
the mustard that everybody has touched that they just used the restroom and came out and had three for a dollar. That's the worst part. I carry condiments on my person.
I always have a condiment belt, like Batman's utility belt,
right.
where whatever condiment, like you go, what do you
Sport
want, Dylan?
Peppers?
Some relish? Here you go. Click, 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 click. And then you got relish. I'm not going to say which stadium I was in, but...
In Chicago?
Yes.
Okay.
But you know how a lot of times when you buy a hot dog or a hamburger or something similar and you're in one of our major sports venues, the condiments are then kind of across the way a little bit so you can put on the onions or the mustard, the ketchup or whatever you want to put on. So there's a kid with his mouth underneath the mustard container, and he just keeps hitting the button, and it's like a fountain of mustard. He's just kind of sucking the mustard out of this mustard machine.
Which is weird in itself, because usually kids don't like the taste of mustard because it's kind of pungent.
Right.
So they typically right. use ketchup.
I know you like to create a backstory for characters that you encounter. I couldn't imagine the scenario of this kid where he goes to a sporting event and he sees unlimited mustard and says to himself, well, I'm in heaven.
It had to be at Sox Park.
I'm not saying.
I know it had
why
to
do
be
you know
there.
That?
Because it just sounds like something a White Sox fan would do.
The team's losing to Baltimore 8-1. It's the fifth inning. I'm going to go down and get as much mustard as
but
I can
see,
eat.
He's waiting for his dad to get a beer.
Right.
He's got nothing to do. He probably got a great Polish with onions. You need the mustard.
Right.
So he was just, he had
right.
nothing to do. It was killing some time. Was his lips on the white?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, God.
All right. Since then, I have not had a condiment on a hot dog or a hamburger or a chicken sandwich
and
in any sporting event.
And you've just ruined it for all of us.
I can't. I mean, that's just one time. I saw it one time, but that's all it took. I can't do it after that.
You know, you laughed at my condiment belt.
But now the practicality of it starts to make sense, doesn't
it? I know.
It's not a bad idea.
Oh, we got to get this in really quick. Pat, we only have about 30 seconds here, but talk about the roadside panini in Italy.
The Autostrada is the highway, and they have where the gas stations are and the fill-ups and everything else. They have great restaurants in there, and everything is always fresh. And the guy that said that was the place to get the hot paninis or the cold sandwiches is correct, because if you go around Rome or any of the other big cities in these small places and you want a panini, the restaurants, the fine restaurants, don't serve them. But if you go into one of these small places, chances are it's been sitting there for a while, probably since the last Pope died in the 1200s, okay? So the guy is completely correct about that. That's the best place when you're on the road. You stop, whether you're hungry or you get gas or both. That's the place
the
to go.
The best panini in all of Italy is at a gas station. Is that that's yeah, possible?
That's like our Oasis is here. They're,
right.
they're elaborate. They're like grocery stores. There are restaurants, and then you can get your gas there, too.
All so. Right.
Do they have a Sbarro in Italy at roadside like we do with our Oasis?
No.
Okay,
no.
Good to know.
That's the
an
difference.
American invention.
Right. I know, Pat.
All right, Pat,
kidding.
I stand corrected. Well, thank you so much. I've never
take
been
care.
To Italy,
thank
but
you.
Now two people are saying it, and so there
now
must
I want to go.
Now let's go to Italy. All right, we'll take a quick break. Kim has the news coming up in just a moment. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's time to get the Feistometer out. Or Feistometer, which is it? Feistometer?
The Feistometer, similar to the Seanometer that they used to have at Wrigley Field for Sean Dunstan.
Somebody I went to grade school with invented the Seanometer.
Really?
Dave Sela, yeah.
Oh, how about that? That's
that
excellent.
That's pretty exciting.
Eric Zorn is here, the feistiest columnist this city's ever seen. Hello, Eric.
The Feistometer is at 100, I think.
It should be. I feel safe.
Trump is
going
to be our next president, everybody.
Wendy was just saying, do you know what the survey was?
The latest poll has Donald Trump ahead of Hillary Clinton, like 46 to 44.
Yeah.
I'm scared.
Well, I think part of
will
that.
Will you hold me?
I think part of that, yes, I'll come over during the break and we'll just cuddle. That's not very feisty, though, to cuddle someone.
No.
I should tell just, it to man up. Or
right.
You
that's
lost
right.
the moniker right
no,
then
no.
and there.
I'm just a sensitive guy. I've been exposed. You know, what's going on, though, here, I think, is that, you know, the Democratic Party is now riven. You know, the Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton people are really at each other's throats. Robert Reich recently posted, and he's been a big backer. You guys hear about this? He's a big backer, Bernie Sanders, and he posted on his Facebook page something to the effect of, you know, well, if this doesn't go the way we want it to, we all have to, you know, get behind Hillary Clinton and pull on the same oars because it's too important.
What does that mean if this doesn't go the way we want it
to? Well, if Bernie doesn't get the former Clinton administration official, Secretary of Labor, I want to say.
Yeah.
He's now out at Berkeley. And anyway, he's still a well-respected liberal voice. And he said, you know, this doesn't go the way we want it to. If Bernie Sanders doesn't somehow pull off a miracle, then we've all got to get behind Hillary Clinton. And he was just attacked by Bernie supporters. Like, you're a sellout. She's terrible. This is awful. And the truth is that one of the things that happened last week really underscored what's going to happen with this election. The importance of it is that Trump released a list of 11 people who he would nominate to the Supreme Court if he's elected. They're all conservative jurists. And if you care about things like woman's right to choose, those kind of issues, and you want the Supreme Court, not to okay some of these state laws that are being passed now that are basically restricting abortion rights, those kind of issues, those are all at stake. And Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders will appoint more liberal justices to the Supreme Court. And we already have one outstanding seat. It's 4-4 right now. Merrick Garland's nomination doesn't seem to be going anywhere.
What's happened? That's completely stalled.
It just seems to be stalled out. Yeah, and I don't see, unless the polling really changes and it looks like Hillary Clinton's going to clobber Trump, which it could happen, that the polls will shift around, because who knows what Trump's going to say. The other day he was saying something like, we got to get rid of all gun, you know, these no gun zones in schools. He was like, well, let's get rid of all those. Let's let people carry guns in schools. He walked that back pretty quickly, but he's got a tendency to say things and then think later. He might end up saying something that was just, you know, I know I've been saying this for 8 months now, that he's going to say something that's going to ruin.
But every other candidate that we've ever seen in our lifetimes, that was a factor, that at some point, if they said something dangerous, it could really screw up their chances. He's foolproof.
Or just said, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Howard Dean's candidate.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden he's gone. Like, did you hear what he said? He said, yeah.
All right. So that said, what is it that's different about Donald Trump than all the other candidates that were so, you had to be so careful to not say the wrong thing? Why does that not factor
in
with him?
You know, I think part of it is that he doesn't ever apologize. He just keeps going forward.
And people respect that. People are so sick of how politics have been run that it's refreshing to many.
Yes, people are they're sick of people saying, oh, that was out of context. I know that I said that all Muslim people should be banned, but that was all out of context. What I really meant was this. Instead, he just keeps, he'll double down.
I said
down.
It, so what?
He'll double down on that, and people really admire, they admire that strength.
But don't you think in real life, I admire somebody who does apologize so much more than somebody who does not apologize. I love a guy or a girl who says, boy, I said this or thought this or did this, and I made a mistake. I have so much more respect for somebody like that than somebody who will make a mistake or two or three or four and just sweep them under a rug.
Yes, but the problem with a lot of these politicians is not that they – is that the way they apologize is to claim that they were misquoted or misunderstood or taken out of context. They don't own up to having said it. They basically say, well, if you misunderstood me as saying that all Muslims should be kept out of the country, then I apologize to you for your pathetic misunderstanding, rather than saying – I that was the wrong thing to say. I didn't think that through. He's been able to get away with that, and Wendy's right. It is sold as authenticity. Like, this is somebody who is going to, you know, means what he says and says what he means. Now,
least you know where you stand then with him.
Yeah, except that you really don't.
You don't.
That he does take things back, and he does walk things back all the time, but he does it in a way that sort of puts the blame on you for having misunderstood. I mean, one of the interesting things that he said really early on, you remember this when he was talking about John McCain, right? People saying, John McCain's a war hero, and I don't think, you know, you wouldn't find hardly anybody in this country who would deny that John McCain's a war hero. He was imprisoned in Vietnam for, what was it, 5 years?
He is
7
the
years,
definition no? of a war hero.
Yeah. I mean, and so
he is.
And so was Bob Dole, actually, if you remember him from World War II. But, you know, McCain was a war hero. He refused to be released, if you remember. They offered to let him go because his dad was well connected. I think his dad was a high military official, and so they were going to play some games and release. He refused to be released. He's a hero. I mean, you don't have to agree with his politics to say, hey, the guy's a hero. And Trump comes out and says, well, you know, he got captured.
I like guys who don't get captured.
My heroes to me are the guys who weren't captured. It was outrageous, an outrageous thing to say. Veterans were offended, former prisoners of war, families, just everybody was offended. And he never really, he just like kind of kept going with that. And people say, well, yeah, he said something stupid, but at least he says what he thinks.
So why now is Meghan McCain, John McCain's daughter, why is she on Donald Trump's side? That's a curious turn of events.
Did she? I haven't heard that.
Yeah, there was an incident last week where she was defending Donald Trump, and I don't understand why you would do that.
That's interesting, because she has been someone who has been much more moderate, much more, even than her father. She was someone who, you know, MSNBC would have her on periodically to be the voice of conservative reason.
View a lot.
So I don't know. It's very interesting, though. But you know, just to get back to this, I think that, you know, what's happened right now is that the Republican Party is coming together behind Trump, and the Democratic Party is still really split.
Yeah.
And once the Democratic Party, assuming that this happens, does decide they're going to have to unify behind the nominee, almost certainly Hillary Clinton, then I think these polls are going to be more telling. We're going to know more about what the public actually thinks. The dominant theme, I was listening to the Sunday talk shows over the weekend. I'm that nerdy.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all saying how this is an unprecedented election as to how unpopular each candidate is.
I know.
That we've never seen in our lifetimes, or maybe ever in the United States, a presidential election between two candidates who the public just dislikes.
Right.
Intensely. More than 60%. You know, disapproval for both candidates at this point in the election. This is the seduction phase, right, of the election. This is when you're supposed to be, you know, your popularity, especially among your own party, is supposed to be very
high.
But
is that a reflection of the job itself, the office of presidency, the office of the presidency itself?
Well, yeah, after they're elected, yes. I mean, the president's popularity rises and falls, but usually the candidates are the ones who are saying what you want to hear, and they're being nice to you, and they're all like drawing these verbal portraits of how wonderful America is going to be.
But
when
look
they're
at
elected.
How at some point we had 21 candidates, we had 17 on the Republican side, we had 4 on the Democratic side, we had 21 potential presidents, and the two that seem to be the last man and woman standing are that unpopular. How can that be?
Well, I think it certainly reflects how polarized our politics are, that you've got people on both sides. And the other thing is, I actually think that Joe Biden really missed a bet here.
I think he did,
that
too.
He, you know, his son died, and I think he had a hard time getting over that, which you would understand. And he decided he wasn't ready for the rigors of a presidential campaign. But people like Joe Biden.
Yeah.
He's hard not to like. I mean, you may not like his politics, but he's a likable
totally likable.
People don't really seem to like Hillary Clinton. They don't seem to, and they don't definitely don't like Donald Trump. And you've got this, and so you're going to have this election where people are just going to be voting against somebody. Like, I don't, and this is why I think the Republicans are coalescing right now. They're saying, we can't have Hillary Clinton be the president. So, as distasteful as it may be to many of us, and I believe that it is for many, many Republicans to vote for Trump, because he's clearly unqualified to be president. I mean, my goodness, he has almost no knowledge about foreign policy. His ideas of, I mean, he talks about starting trade wars. I mean, and those things can lead to shooting wars. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a horrifying prospect, but not as horrifying to a lot of Republicans as a Hillary Clinton president.
So would your guess be, based on the fact of what you just said, of two very unpopular people running for president, low turnout or a high turnout? What does that equal?
It tends to be a recipe for low turnout.
Yeah.
When politicians are unpopular, people aren't motivated to get to the polls because for some reason a lot of people find it a real chore to go vote, and they don't want to go. And so if they're not excited, and I think Obama brought out a lot of people to 8 years ago, particularly 4 years ago, some who actually were excited to vote for Obama.
Right.
And that's really, you know, part of it. You've got to motivate your base because they're at home and they've got their jobs and their lives, and they've got to carve an hour, sometimes during a presidential election, a couple of hours out of their Tuesday to go and vote, or arrange to do, you know, early voting, something like that. And that's difficult for people. So you've got to get them motivated. And if it's just hating people, then.
But the thrill of voting for the first African-American president does not translate to the thrill of voting for the first female president.
Not yet. It doesn't seem to.
Interesting. A break, more show. Eric Zorn is here. Is he feisty? Yeah, he's feisty. He's Eric Zorn. Come on, it's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill F., it's Wendy Snyder, and our friend Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. Eric, tell us the story a little bit, if you could, about Marcus Owens. What do we need to know here?
Well, this is a story. It happened May 1st, late in the night of April 30th. And this kid from Waubonsie Valley High School in Aurora, who's now a student at Iowa, African-American kid, reported to the police there that he'd been attacked by three white guys who'd used racial slurs on him, and they left him with a split lip and broken teeth, and I think needed some stitches to close the wounds on his face. And this was played up in local media here and in media in Iowa City as this horrible hate crime.
Yeah.
And it galvanized the students at Iowa State University.
Waubonsie?
No, it's University of Iowa or Iowa State. I can't remember now which university it is. It's in Iowa City.
See. Okay.
Iowa City? Why am I? University of Iowa. I'm sorry. University of Iowa. So anyway, it galvanized the students at Iowa. They had a sit-in. They felt that the university was responding insufficiently to this kid's complaint. And as they called in the FBI to investigate it as a possible hate crime. And as they looked at surveillance video and other things, they realized that what happened was that this kid was out in a fraternity event and words were exchanged. And he was an instigator in three separate little altercations. And so it was this sort of never mind moment. Last week, his parents issued this apology, saying they're very sorry about what had happened here, and sort of saying that we now realize this is not the case,
mm-hmm.
and that this is going away. And I wrote this column for this past Sunday, talking about the parents' statement, looking at the words of it, and how they were sort of trying, I think, to minimize or diminish his responsibility. And they talk about, you know, misunderstandings and anxiety stemming from this incident. They were saying that upon learning more details of the case, but the parents' statement said, and while racial slurs seem to fuel the violence, Marcus now knows that his account of events was inconsistent with police findings, in part due to alcohol being involved, his embarrassment at his behavior, as well as the injuries he sustained. They're sort of saying that he didn't really know what had happened, and so now he realizes that his account is inconsistent with what the police found.
Yeah.
I think he knew right away what had happened. What happened was he got into a fight, he got his teeth broken, and he decided he was going to have to lie about what happened to his parents, and then this lie completely spiraled out of control. And, you know, the parental apology was not hard enough on him, I thought. I thought they needed to say, look, this was all, instead of saying, you know, he now realizes it was false and so on, they needed to say that, hey, our son lied, and we're sorry, and he's sorry. In fact, he probably should have issued the statement, not his parents. But my conclusion was that I thought that it was the right thing to do to let this incident drop.
Yeah.
And I think it's really a horrible thing to lie about hate crimes. It's the Tawana Brawley story from, 25, 30 years ago, where you know, something happens and you invent a hate crime to go around with an incident. And then it gets everybody all upset and scared. It gets the victim community scared. And it disturbs the community that there's like hateful incidents going on. And it also implicates other people. It implicates the white guys. And it implicates the university and the university president for not responding. It's a really bad thing. You can lie about being mugged when you've actually lost your wallet or something like that. But if you're calling it a hate crime, you're really poisoning the community. But I concluded in my column that I thought that it was the right thing to do to just let this go, to let this, you know, this kid issued an apology or a statement anyway, and everybody now knows what happened, and let's put this behind us rather than to prosecute him, which would have been, certainly the police would have been within their rights. And I thought, you know what? He's 19 years old, got drunk, got in a fight, made a really bad decision, and that decision, as these things happen, you tell a lie, and suddenly you're stuck in the lie, and it gets, I can imagine
snowballs.
This thing spiraling out of control for him, and I'm thinking, you know, I mean, maybe it's because I've got 18-year-olds, and I'm thinking, you know, they don't have a ton of great judgment sometimes, and I'm thinking, you know, this is the kind of thing, you wouldn't want this to follow a kid for the rest of his life. You know, he got a conviction on this that he would have to, you know, turn up in every Google search, it would be on all his job applications and so on. I thought that was the right thing to do. I got a lot of pushback on that from people who thought, no, we need to take this more seriously. They applauded me for taking it seriously enough to call him out, but they felt that what really was called for here was, you know, stronger action on him. So, you know, I stick by what I say. Do you guys think, should they put this guy in jail?
No, I don't think so.
Or find him, made him do community service?
Maybe that.
Yeah.
Maybe
some of that.
Just, I don't know. That's why I'm not in any position to give verdicts of any. Because I really, I'm too flip-floppy.
Yeah, it was the response was really interesting. Because I mean, I expected some pushback, but a lot of what I got from email and comments on Facebook and so on, it's like, you know, what's going on here? Twitter, yeah. People were like, you know, no, you know, this, you got to take this seriously. We have to crack down on this kind of, invention. So
how interesting is this though? If we want to go full circle with the first segment, here's a perfect example of a story where somebody lied. And then at some point it was made better by admitting that this was a lie. Whereas Donald Trump, as we just learned moments ago, seems to be running on a platform of, I'm not backing down on anything I say, true or
false. It shows weakness.
Right.
It shows weakness. Well, that's, right. You know, that, and some people do that. Some people will go to their, I mean, I give the guy, it was a month, right, or 3 weeks where this guy's lie was out there and it was infecting the community and they had a hashtag on Twitter.
They were trying to find the guys who did this to him.
Oh, sure. And, yeah. and they were saying they needed, this was a call for forums and all kinds of things to highlight the issue of racism on campus.
Right.
And it wasn't that. It wasn't a drunken fight.
Yeah.
So I think everybody, you hope everybody learned their lesson here. And the other people who need to learn their lesson, of course, are the people who jump on any report like this and accept it as fact. And one thing I didn't get into in the column was the student newspaper there, you know, barely had any skepticism that this is exactly what had happened. This needed to be done.
Because you don't think someone's going to lie about that. You just don't.
But you always have to keep that in mind.
I know.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and some of the people were bringing up some of the stuff at Missouri. And you know, people would say, I got called the N-word. It's like, well, okay, maybe you did, but you know, given the climate that we're in, it's really easy to say that.
Right.
Did it really happen?
Of course.
So it's really interesting.
Thank you, Eric. It's Eric Zorn. Read him in the Chicago Tribune. You'll like what you see. We'll take a quick break.
And
we'll find out. Yes.
Don't forget to listen to me with Steve Bertrand with our Mincing Rascals podcast. We record every Friday.
Yeah.
This one was really good, but it would have been better if you'd been there.
It was really good. Oh. This first one was really good, even without me, somehow.
Kristen McQuarrie as well, and John Williams.
It's a great show.
Thank you, guys.
if you do say so yourself.
There's a glowing endorsement. Eric Zorn says Eric Zorn's segment is the best. All right. Thanks, Eric. We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Steve has next. It's Bill and Wendy WGN. Was that you who hooed? It was you,
yes.
Right?
You know, it's funny because when we last left each other on Friday, we were talking about the Ferris Bueller's celebration.
Yeah.
What was the anniversary of that?
30th?
Yeah.
God, already we're getting old.
Yeah.
And then we mentioned the Blues Brothers, and you had said that you didn't really love that movie.
You're not supposed to say this out loud, especially not in the confines of Chicago, but the movie The Blues Brothers does nothing for me. But you're not supposed to say that because it makes people very angry.
I have to be honest with you. For the most part, the texters pretty much agreed. There were a lot more than I thought.
I'm shocked by that.
Me too.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people saying you're adult.
Right. We got that a lot.
Adult with a D. T. Sorry.
Right.
Well, it was weird because after the show, we were also talking about Manhattans. And Kevin and I went to get a Manhattan after the show on Friday. And
I appreciate you guys not doing that during the show like you used to. Now you wait till the show's over. So thank you guys for that.
Well, I was trying to find a place that you could go get one and bring it back.
I don't think they have
but
that.
But why not? Because I just wanted to have it at my desk.
Yeah, but
I was walking. I wasn't driving.
I know. But
some bar needs to come up with that idea.
I don't know that that's legal. I don't think they can do that. I don't think you can just walk around like that.
Get it in a to-go cup. That's how I walk my dog.
Kim, is that legal? I don't think you can do that in Chicago, can you? Just go to a bar order something and walk around town with it? I don't think so.
Well, you know, people do it and just put a brown bag over it.
Yeah,
we won't tell.
That looks good.
I didn't want a bottle.
Well, you know, have you seen those wine glasses, like to-go, that have the wine to-go where they have just a little, it almost doesn't look like a juice box, but it has like a little metal label that you peel off. You can take
it on
picnics and stuff, and then you throw the glasses away and you don't have to take the wine glasses.
I didn't know that existed.
I gotta find that.
Yeah, I forget the name of it, but I've seen them.
Is it like a wine glass within another plastic thing?
No, it's just like a little plastic cup that you can throw away. But you know, your wine's already in the cup.
Oh yeah,
so you don't
right.
have to take a bottle of wine. It's already the wine is in the glass and it's covered. So you just take four glasses of wine and you don't have to worry about the bottle or taking glasses or.
Well, Kevin and I went to Michael Jordan's and we wanted a Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
Each. And
you didn't want to split one.
No, because he wanted
one Manhattan,
bourbon.
Please, two straws.
You wanted bourbon. I had to go with the traditional rye.
Right.
And they did it up well, and they had those really cool cherries we were talking about.
Oh, yeah? The Italian ones?
Yes. But I wanted to take it, and I should have brought a red Solo cup and just dumped it in there and walked back here to the office. But we were there enjoying them. It was really delicious. And then Kevin points out that there are various people dressed in Blues Brothers attire.
There was probably like 10 to 15 of them, yeah.
We thought that
dressed
they were
like
coming.
The Blues Brothers?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, fake sideburns and everything.
And there were like couples. There were Jake and Elwood like times five, probably, all in the Michael Jordan's restaurant. And I'm like, they're looking for Bill. That's what we thought
to come
was
and get
happening.
Me for not liking the movie?
Yeah. What, how isn't that weird, though? That
yeah,
we,
what could have caused it? Is there a convention of some sort?
Well, that's what we're hoping the listeners can answer us. 312-981-7200. What was the, was, I don't know.
Or just the biggest coincidence of all time. Because if I saw one, I'd go, oh, that's something. Those guys are just like the Blues Brothers. But once it gets into double digits, you go, something must be up.
And they were all in Michael Jordan's restaurant.
That's where they hang out.
It was really
that's
bizarre.
The place to be.
Kevin pointed it out, and I had to rub my eyes like in a cartoon. Like, am I seeing this?
Right.
That
you
was
didn't
just
talk
one
to any
head.
Of them?
No, we were going to take selfies with it. What happened? Did we forget to do it, Kevin? Is that what happened? I think we forgot to take a selfie. We're going to text it to you.
The best of the impersonators, I think, were the ones that were at the Bulls games for years and years. Were they called the Bulls Brothers? Is that what they were called?
Yeah, I remember
those guys
them.
Are pretty good. And it seems like almost any time there's a street festival or a parade, somebody dressed like the Blues Brothers is a part of it.
Yeah, but five pairs of them?
That's a lot.
It was really...
Did they get along, or was there some sort of... Could you tell there was a simmering rivalry between them?
I think, Kevin, weren't they separate, or were they all hanging together?
They did seem a little paired off, or kind of.
Yeah.
Maybe it was like a Blues Brothers scavenger hunt or something. I don't know.
No.
That's not fun in any way, shape, or form.
That's so peculiar, though.
I know. And
all
we,
gathered together.
We really were going to take a selfie of us with the Blues Brothers, the various incarnations of them, and text it to you, but then we remembered you don't really use your phone over the weekend.
You know, I really don't.
I know.
Once I get home, not just on the weekend, but I just, like, I know it's the thing that everyone does is to keep their phone with them all the time. I just, when I get home, I put the phone down, and then I'm done until the next day.
Well, all the people that matter are at your house, pretty much.
Yeah. Or I'd read about whatever happened in the paper the next day.
Well, that was it. We just thought it was a weird coincidence that,
that's
you know, maybe
strange.
An hour or two earlier you had come out saying you didn't like the Blues Brothers and then were surrounded by the Blues Brothers.
You don't think their plan was to go and ruin the Ferris Bueller Festival, do you?
You know, maybe.
I wonder if that had something to do with it. We'll show them, Ferris Bueller
no one
fans.
Knows what was going on, but that was really wild.
Interesting.
And I'm telling you, it was a really delicious Manhattan.
Well, that's all that matters.
And
on
what
a Friday
they did,
after the show?
It was a beautifully formed square ice cube that took up most of the glass.
Yeah.
So as it melted, it perfected the drink.
Oh.
But it was just crystal clear. It looked like a fake ice cube.
It was that perfect.
But I licked it, so I know it was a real ice cube.
How did the Blues Brothers react to that? How
they
did all
were not watching me.
Too bad. All right. We'll take a quick break. We have a lot for you on our second show. We're thrilled you're listening. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Did you by any chance happen to see this? This was the most popular video of the week. You really almost couldn't turn your computer on throughout the weekend and not see this. All it is a lady at Kohl's. She goes into Kohl's to buy a Chewbacca mask from Star Wars.
I did
and then
see
she gets
it.
In her car and she puts it on.
And laughs like crazy.
She can't stop laughing. And it's gotten so far. Now, it was posted on May the 19th. Today's May the 23rd. So 3.5 days later, it has received 1,570,971 views of a lady putting on a mask and laughing.
We have the mask. It's kind of cool because when you move the mouth moves with you.
Yeah.
So it's rigged so it does that.
Right.
It is kind of neat, but I looked at it once when Jimmy Mack wore it, and that was all I needed.
Right.
This just inspires people to be goofs.
I can't figure out, and I have to admit, I'm one of the people who, I just gave you that huge number, that 1,970,971 people. I'm the one in that equation. I watched it as well. I sat through the 2.5 minutes and watched it. But it just shows this. We now live in a day and age where you can be famous just for putting on a mask and laughing.
Well, how famous is she? I mean, if you saw her on the street, would you recognize her?
If she had the mask on, I would.
Yeah,
if
but
she
otherwise.
Didn't have the mask on, I would not. Let's play a little bit of the audio for you.
If it
you
is funny.
Somehow didn't get a chance to see this. Again, I'll set it up. It's a lady who went into Kohl's and bought a Chewbacca mask and then put it on her face and thought it was funny. Here's how it goes.
That's not me making that noise. It's the mask. Here, listen.
Do you think some people are easier to please than others?
Yeah, but it's not fake, because at first I thought,
no,
I watched
not.
It twice.
Did you?
Because at first I'm like, oh, that's just fake, and that she's really laughing.
Oh, this is the most fun she's ever had.
Which makes me sad for her. Talk about a sad backstory.
But now we've done the backstory on her. What is the future for this woman? Will she get her own reality show? Will one of the two political parties decide that's vice presidential material? What will happen next to this woman who is now incredibly famous just for putting on a mask and cackling about it?
She's not incredibly famous.
She got almost 1,600,000 hits in 3.5 days.
Because there are people that don't use their phone on the weekend and look at the computer.
I guess.
And if it pops up on your feed, because I reposted something, it's an otter eating a piece of lettuce. I don't know if you've seen it.
No.
It is the cutest damn thing. That I've watched about 5 times. I'm not usually like that either, where I share an animal. I'm really not.
Now, can I ask you a question? And again, this dates back to Friday's show. You were saying that you're not the type of person who will read a book more than once. You're not the type of person who will watch a movie more than once. But you did watch an otter eating lettuce 5 times.
It's 45 seconds long.
Is that what it is? It's
was
the
it
time
iceberg
moment.
Or romaine? Or
it was
shouldn't
iceberg.
Matter, Steve.
Iceberg.
That shouldn't matter.
Yes, it does, because iceberg's crunchier. And the crunch that this otter was... Plus, otters are so damn cute.
Yeah, there's that. What if an otter put on a Chewbacca mask and just kept laughing at itself?
I would watch that at least 1,000,000 times myself. I guess she is famous. I stand
she
corrected.
She is famous.
Christy, where'd you see the laughing Chewbacca woman?
Hey, Wendy, it is Christy. Yeah, I saw her on Good Morning America this morning.
She was a guest on Good Morning America because she put on a mask and laughed.
Jealous.
A little.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what the after story was?
What?
She got a phone call or a text or some Facebook thing from a woman who said her autistic son, who had not laughed in 2 years, watched her video and laughed.
All right, then it's worth it. Then that's a good thing, I guess.
You bet.
That is a good thing.
Thank you, Christy.
Thanks, Christy.
And then
George Lucas called and he wants to put her in his museum.
Right.
Well, the Friends of the Park have boycotted this woman.
Right.
Hi, Leslie.
Friends of the Mask.
Hi. So, do you know there's a video out there of Kohl's knocking on her door and thanking her? Have you guys heard about this?
I know that Kohl's sent her like $500 worth of Star Wars paraphernalia.
Oh.
Right.
Okay, so even more than that, you have to Google it. So they rang her doorbell, and they had the Chewbacca masks for the whole rest of her family, so she didn't have to share. And then they had 2 bins full of toys worth, I think, $500. And then they gave her $2,500 worth of gift cards
wow.
to use anytime she wanted. And then they also gave her 10,000 Kohl's points, whatever those
what
are.
Oh,
the Kohl's cash.
What is
yeah,
that?
Yeah, they call them points. It's free money. It's free Kohl's money.
Oh, it's like having a gift certificate?
It's
to Kohl's?
You accumulate these points and then it's that's pretty great.
They said that they can't, that because of her video, they couldn't obviously keep the Chewbacca mask on the shelf and they wanted to thank her personally for the free advertising.
And that's all within a span, seriously, of 3 days.
All right, my wheels are turning so quickly right now.
What are you going
to do? Kevin, you and I could have been famous if we posted pictures of us and all those Blues Brothers in one location.
Laughing like hyenas, though.
I don't know if that's entirely true.
Wow.
Leslie, we got to think of something. All I want is the free Kohl's points.
She's in the world of Kohl's, she's a millionaire now.
I posted something about the quesalupa from Taco Bell, and they didn't give me jack anything.
Zero.
We're in the wrong place at the wrong time.
That's it, isn't it, Leslie? Thank you so
Thanks,
much for
Leslie.
The call.
Thank you. Now, Jewel answered me when I said that I don't think I'm ever going to win the $1 million on the Jewel Monopoly.
What did they do?
They said, hang in there, Wendy. Well, it's ended and I haven't won
No.
Maybe we could, like, get some Dockers from Kohl's, put those on, laugh hysterically on camera, and then the rest will work itself out.
Why are Dockers funny?
Well, they're not, but that's the formula.
You find something that isn't inherently funny, you make it funny
it's
by laughing
mask.
At it.
It's a mask. That's not funny?
I don't...
Did you laugh when you watched it? Be
no,
honest.
No, I didn't laugh. I was just, like, I'm reading the story going, that can't happen. You can't just put on a mask and laugh and have... 1.5 million people respond, but it did happen.
So you didn't laugh to send a message because you were jealous.
No, I was not jealous. I was befuddled.
How could you not laugh, though? Even just hearing it, I was laughing.
What if it was Kevin Hart wearing the mask?
No, then I would not laugh.
I got to tell you, that movie looks stupidly funny with him and
don't
The Rock.
Don't say that. The funny part, don't say. The stupid part, isn't the premise of every Kevin Hart movie the exact same?
I've never seen one.
They pair him off with somebody and he's in a situation that he's uncomfortable in.
What if they paired him off with you to make a video at Kohl's?
All right, then you got a movie.
Would you do it?
That's a movie. No. No.
I don't know why you don't like him so much. He was never a Blues Brother.
No, that's true. Yeah, now that I think about it, he wasn't. Maybe I do like him.
He's funny.
If funny means what I think it means, he's not.
But come on. Now, funny is objective.
What do you think
subjective.
It means?
Steve, this is what I think funny means, is somebody who does or says things that are amusing and then you laugh or you react positively. Kevin Hart, I just scratch my head going, that's the same guy he played in the last movie and the movie before that and the movie before that.
Is he making a lot of money doing
these
movies?
Tons of money.
That's why you don't
like
him.
Incredible amounts of money.
You know, money does not buy happiness.
No, I guess.
Or a Chewbacca mask.
No,
because they're sold out.
Right. Can't get one if you need one. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder, and we're trying our best to figure out how a woman wearing a Chewbacca mask could get almost 2 million hits in 3.5 days just by putting on a mask in a car at Kohl's and then laughing hysterically at it.
I'm not trying to figure out how. I know how. It made people laugh.
It made people laugh. She was on Good Morning America today.
That shocks me a little bit.
Well...
That they got her so quickly.
Oh, well, except now, the way the world is that all the producers of these shows, and even here on our own show, we're always looking for this sort of thing. I mean, we talked about that optical illusion the other day that was all over the internet. So everybody's trying to track these things down. So this lady just puts on a mask, and it's instant fame and notoriety. Kohl's gives her all these Kohl bucks or whatever they're called. I don't know what they're called. And it reminded me of, now I saw this several months ago, a man who has quadruplets, he's got 4 babies, and he's sitting at a table with these babies, at a specially crafted table where the baby fits into the table somehow. I've never seen anything
like
quite
a,
like this.
A cutout of the table, 4 cutouts for the 4 babies, and then there's a little seat that fits into the cutout.
You know what it looks like? It looks like the dad is a blackjack dealer at a blackjack table in Las Vegas.
Baby and all blackjack.
Right. The babies are sitting around him playing blackjack.
It's like baby Beethoven or...
It's similar. It's very similar. He's trying... I don't even know if he's trying to make them laugh,
yes.
But he's just making faces at them.
He's making noises to make them laugh.
Can we play a little bit? No, I know it's radio and you can't see this.
But just go to... Just Google laughing quadruplets the next day and it'll pop up. How many hits does this guy have?
21,107,000. Now, you get paid... We've talked about this before. Over at YouTube, you get paid... Once you're up there, once you get a lot of hits, they pay you.
Is $22 million a lot in this day and age?
I don't know that I don't think he gets a dollar a hit, but let's say he gets a fraction of that. Let's say he made a couple $100,000 off of this just to sit at a table and make your kids laugh. And me, by the way.
We better.
This made me laugh.
We better get to work coming up with something.
This sounds like our meetings that we have during the business lunch. You and Kevin and me.
He's just going, and they are dying, which is really good if you can make infants laugh.
Right. I wonder if they would laugh as hard at the Kevin Hart movie you were trying to get me to go see.
Like that one,
they're losing it.
I like when they don't laugh at that one. Yeah, but that doesn't do it.
All right, there's four of them. So when one person laughs, another person laughs.
Sure.
So that's why he's not that funny.
He needs new material. I'm not saying that bit he's doing there, that wouldn't work in all clubs. You know, you got to know your audience. He knows if he's working a room and you got nothing but 5-month-olds, that's going to do really well.
Isn't there a new Baby Zanies opening?
Yeah, Baby Zanies will be open in the fall. Go see the babies at Baby Zanies. All right. A couple of other quick things. Number one, Kim Jong-un, you know, our friend from North Korea, Marilyn Monroe, is trying to find the appropriate husband for his sister. His sister is on the dating block. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is launching a take-me-out-style matchmaking contest in hopes of finding a husband for his spinster sister. Unmarried Kim Yo-jong is North Korea's most powerful woman after being elected to the Hermit State's powerful Central Committee. She is 29 years old. Now, her big brother Kim, how old do you think he is? How old is Kim Jong-un?
35.
33. It's hard to tell with that haircut, isn't it?
I would put him at 8 if you're going with haircuts.
Haircut makes you look like you're 8, and the youngest child on 8 is enough. He is
Adam
Rich.
Yeah.
Nicholas.
Oh, yeah,
Nicholas.
Yeah, sorry. Dare I go against you with Kim, this stupid trivia?
I know the dumb stuff. Kim Jong-un, age 33, is looking for a spouse for his sister and will personally vet 30 likely candidates for the capital's Pyongyang elite.
Careful.
I can say the Pyongyang.
She meet these people on jong.com?
Yes. Yes. The selection process is similar to Patty McGuinness's hit ITV show where 30 lovelorn lasses vie for the attentions of one man. I'm guessing that's a show somewhere in Ireland, I'm guessing. But in Leader Kim version, the stakes are higher with the hand in marriage of his sister to the winner.
This poor guy, even if he does approve...
Yeah.
And what's Kim Jong-un's sister's name?
Kim Yo-jong. Everyone gets the name. When you are born, you get Kim is yours, and then you can deviate from that from there. Kim Yo-jong.
I did a spit take with real spit.
So of course.
Well, too bad it wasn't recorded. Boy, that would have been a lot of
a million hits.
Yeah, right. See,
a million hits.
You missed it.
There, that was it. We could have been on Good Morning America.
Too late.
Watch this.
Too late.
Bill Left says something about the Kim family.
Right. And
Wendy spits.
And then the reaction.
Sorry.
But then you have, even if you win this game, your brother-in-law is Kim Jong-un, and that's uncomfortable.
Who's going to take her hand in marriage knowing that he's going to...
Whoever he tells to.
Right. I guess that's the other side of the coin.
Right.
Good
but how
point.
Awkward. I mean, everybody has a relative or two that you're like, oh, no, we have to go to their house for the holidays. When Kim Jong-un is that relative, that makes life unbearable. You can't do that. The regime has tried to find Kim Jong-un. No, that's him. What's the sister's name? Kim Yo-jong. It's just the same letters mixed up. That whole family is a word scramble.
I have their albums, I think, the Kim Family Singers.
Right. They're fantastic.
It's all a junior jumble.
It is a junior jumble. The regime has tried to find a man for Kim Yo-jong in 2012, but no one lived up to the expectations. And the process is now to begin after she moved into high office. Candidates must have graduated from or be students of Pyongyang's Kim Il-sung University. They must be 5'10" tall. They must be good looking.
Wait, no deviation. You can't be 5'9½" or 5'11".
Very strict about
this. Gotta be 5'10". How tall is he, I wonder?
5'10¼".
So he just has to be above them.
Is he that tall? He doesn't
seem. I have no idea. No, he does not seem tall
at all. They must be good looking, as I mentioned, and they must have served in the army. And a defector who revealed that the North Koreans dating show said that Kim Yo-jong was a haughty woman with exacting standards. That's the one that she was going to marry. She was engaged a few years ago, and then that broke up for some weird reason.
Why didn't she go with Kim Huddy Young?
Kim Huddy Young?
Haughty.
Haughty.
She was haughty.
Oh, for her name?
He's 5'9", by the way.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I thought he was...
Even shorter?
Kim Jong-il,
yeah.
5'3", only.
If he'd wear his hair up, like remember Wayne Cochran back in the 60s had his hair way up?
Eddie Cochran.
If he'd wear his hair Eddie Cochran style, he'd look like 6 foot or 6'1".
That's why Prince added so much to the top of his head.
That's true, isn't it?
And,
I think that's
and
true.
And 5-inch heels.
Well, yeah. Yeah. So I wish everyone well in this contest. I would not want to win this contest because the idea of sitting next to my brother-in-law and have it be Kim Jong-un, that's disconcerting.
Are they going to televise this? Because here's your reality show. It's the new dating game.
That would be great. Call Bergeron. This is the kind of thing Tom Bergeron would love.
Can I tell you something about the quads that you watched?
The laughing kids?
Yeah. Quadruplets?
Yeah.
They're in high school now, so I don't know how old that video is.
Is that true? Are they really?
You gotta update your router.
No, I get all the news from I get everything I want to know from 1998. Those little babies are now how old?
This was last year and they were in 10th grade.
Wow.
So they're in high school.
Have they reenacted it? Do they all sit around the table and the dad goes boo and
they
go,
should.
Dad, this is stupid.
Why don't you write to them
see
and you can direct
that.
It and then right. You can get profits.
I would love to do that.
Yeah, you need to get a better router or connection.
I wonder
you still
how
have dial-up at the house?
Yeah, I got dial-up. Why?
From
have they perfected that?
90?
Yeah, I do. All right, a quick break and then more show coming your way. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. We were talking about Kim Jong-un, who is also being inducted on Friday into the WGN Radio Walk of Fame.
He is not, and don't even.
He missed by 5 votes, which I would have asked for a recount but and a discount, but he did not. Give him credit. So now they're going to have a game to find a new husband for his sister, Kim Jong-Katrell. So that's coming up.
You've got them all socked away somewhere, don't you?
I can't remember.
Someone wants to know what happens to the people who don't win this competition.
Yikes.
And, you know, what happens to the losers? Are they killed?
I think the winner gets the sister's hand in marriage. The losers lose their hand. There's some hand-related thing is all I remember.
Peter has an idea who might make a perfect husband for Kim Jong-Katrell, as you called her. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Who would it be?
I have a suggestion.
Who?
Kim Dennis Rodman, and he already has the bridal dress.
And they get along.
Yeah, Kim Jong-un is a big fan, and Dennis seems to enjoy him. So, yeah, that could be nice. Great idea. Thanks, Peter.
You.
Take care.
Peter held on a very long time to get that out.
Give him credit for that.
I wanted to give him
definitely
some definite credit.
Yep.
Do you know what we're going to be doing later on this afternoon?
What's that?
Coming up after the news, have you ever broken a board, like karate-wise?
No.
I'm going to take my rings off
no.
now. I took karate for a while, and there is a way in which you hit it that...
they always say mind over matter when you're breaking a board, but
I think
the pain would be so great as you punch the board that I don't know if mind over matter does the trick.
There's not really a trick to it because I actually did break a board, but it's not like, you know, really sturdy.
Oh, it's a that's like
it's not flimsy.
Balsa
it's not,
wood or
no,
something?
No, it's not like that, but there is a way, and it's just how you hit it.
Yeah.
You know, you have people holding it very tightly on the edges, so if your hand, the heel of your hand goes in and you hit it, just between it being held on the edges, it's going to give somewhere, and... You'll see. You'll probably be able to do it.
Now, I haven't seen the board yet, and you haven't either, but do you imagine you or me or both of us will be able to do this?
I hope we can. I hope they don't bring like a big old railroad tie-in or something, because that's not going to work.
That would be
and
terrible.
We'll walk out of here with our hands bandaged.
Nobody wants that.
Well, we're going to talk to the executive director of ALS Association Greater Chicago Chapter, and we're going to find out how you can... break through a board. It's a free 2-day event that's going on in Daly Plaza, the ALS Association Greater Chicago Chapter. So you can learn more about it, and you can go to alsachicago.org. Yes, ALSA, meaning association. I hope we can break a board.
between the two of us, it would be embarrassing if we didn't break at least one.
Maybe
word.
We should have Kevin do it.
Kevin, are you prepared?
Because then yeah? It wouldn't. I'll try it. We can try it. Come on.
I want to try it.
Wouldn't it be delicious if Wendy did it and Kevin couldn't?
That would be something.
It would even be better if Wendy did it and Bill didn't.
That would be something.
Watch that video 250,000 times.
Hey, we'll finally make it on Good Morning America.
All right, so that's coming up later in the show.
Right after the news.
Oh, right after the news?
So get ready. Right. I've already taken my rings off. Come on, baby.
I can tell you mean it.
Come on.
All right, so let's see
I'm
if either one of us.
Orange belt or yellow, whatever's above that.
One of them. We'll find out if either of us can break through a board and a whole lot more right after Steve's news. It's WGN. Everybody was kung fu.
Bill, we might be in luck. I don't see any boards.
I don't either. If you forgot the boards, I'm okay. Oh, you brought the boards. Uh-oh.
See, Bill, they're not that thick.
Uh-oh.
Here's what's going on. We are trying to break through ALS. We have Julie Sharp in the studio, Executive Director of ALS Association Greater Chicago Chapter. Hi, Julie.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for coming up here. And you have brought with you Daniel Trout. Daniel, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Yourself?
I'm actually doing pretty well for a Monday. We get the sunshine finally.
Yeah, finally got some nice weather out here.
I knew it would happen. Although, who knows, it might snow tomorrow. Right. You never know.
It could happen.
Daniel, you were diagnosed with ALS after doing several military tours in Afghanistan, so we thank you for your service first and foremost.
Thank you.
And you were telling us something off the air. When did you discover you had ALS?
It was actually in January. I got hit head on by a drunk driver. We were on our way back from Wisconsin, about a mile from my parents, and they just came over lanes, hit us square on. And right after that, like in the first few weeks after that, my symptoms had gotten just really skyrocketed. I had trouble walking, and it just kept going downhill from there.
Now, the impact and the accident had caused your symptoms to become more severe. Is that
yes.
the case?
Yes, they really aggravated them.
Good God, you were traveling with your fiance.
Mm-hmm.
We have some big news to report that you guys were supposed to get married in 2017, but it looks like the wedding is happening pretty soon, huh?
Yeah, it's actually happening this Saturday.
You sound so calm for somebody who's getting married on Saturday.
It's just been a roller coaster these past few weeks.
Sure, of course. So prior to this accident, you did know or you did not know that you had ALS?
I didn't know. The only thing I had was some weakness in my hand.
And that's it. So what happened because of the accident to lead you to know that you have ALS?
After the accident, I noticed both of my legs were having a lot of weakness, and it just kept getting worse and worse.
Yeah.
To the point where I actually was collapsing and had to start walking with a cane. And then I had gone to see a few neurologists, and just this past April on the 15th was when I actually got the hard diagnosis of ALS.
Yeah.
Is there a connection with people who have served in our military and ALS?
There is. What the thing is for veterans, they find them to be 2 to 4 times more likely to actually get ALS. They're not quite sure why that is, but...
And currently, we are working with the Department of Defense. We have research programs that are housed within there that are trying to figure out what is the connection between military service and the contraction of ALS. We have had several research projects that are taking place within the DOD that are going to be showing and bringing breakthroughs, I think, within the next, hopefully, short period of time.
What's the guess? Is there even a guess as to why the numbers would be so much higher? I can't even imagine what it could be.
You know, you just don't know. We really don't know. No. We're looking at environmental. You're looking at some other possibilities.
Yeah.
But they really don't know.
And why don't you explain, you know, if something doesn't touch our family, a lot of times we're not aware of it. So why don't you describe ALS and what it is and what the symptoms are?
Absolutely. So ALS is a degenerative neuromuscular disease, and it's typically the prognosis is 2 to 4 years from the time you're diagnosed to the time that you pass away. The average life expectancy is around 14 months. An individual, it presents differently in everyone. If it's lumbotic, it kind of starts with maybe the marching starting with your hands or your feet, and you could be tripping. You can't self-diagnose at all, but you know, it can start with your limbs, or it starts in the bulbar area, like in your throat area, where you're having difficulty swallowing and speaking, and that affects your respiratory system faster. Eventually, you're no longer able to walk, to talk, to swallow, to speak, and eventually breathe. Again, we're on the Daily Plaza yesterday and today, and we're going to be talking about that. May is ALS Awareness Month, so we're grateful to be able to be here. It's also Cure 90-90. Every 90 minutes, someone's diagnosed. Every 90 minutes, someone loses their battle. Also, with this disease, I think one of the things that people may not be aware of is that cognitively you're aware of what the disease is. There's very little dementia. There's only about 5% where you have frontal temporal dementia that's a part of the disease.
So it's like opposite of Alzheimer's. You're aware of what's going on, but you're unable to control your body, whereas it's the other way around in Alzheimer's.
Absolutely.
Daniel, I'm feeling strange and funny listening to Julie talk about this and talking about the symptoms with you right here.
Yeah, it's definitely very, very difficult because as I'm going through this, I see my body getting weaker and weaker. And really, right now, there's not any drugs or treatments to help it. And that just takes a huge emotional toll on you.
Absolutely.
And everyone around you as well.
How strange is it also that you're in such a dangerous part of the world at such a dangerous time? You're in Afghanistan and you come back seemingly in one piece and healthy, and then you get home and all this happens to you. That's crazy.
I know. And it's like back in January, even before the accident, just a couple weeks before, we would go out dancing for hours on end.
Yeah.
And then a few weeks after the accident, I can barely walk.
Right.
So
how old are you, Daniel?
I'm only 25.
Good God, 25 years old. Someone has texted in and was curious if you were a pilot.
No, I was actually a cook.
A cook. Because someone said, 630 says, was he a pilot? My husband was a naval aviator and died from complications of ALS in 2007. I had no idea whatsoever that there was some kind of link with people who have done such amazing things for us back at home to give us our freedoms, and then a big thank you coming home and having issues with ALS. When did that come to be where there was any connection or thought of a connection? Fairly recently?
No, within the last 10 years, I would say the service connectability piece of legislation was passed, and that's where the gentlemen and ladies who have served our country, we've been fighting on their behalf to have 100% benefits provided through the VA system. And so really the correlation has been, I would say, the last 10 years, and there's been a lot of research through the Department of Defense that is focused, which is a great thing because they don't, it's good research that's not going to just help the veterans, but also the public.
For a long time, ALS was referred to as Lou Gehrig's disease. Is it still that way, or is that tailed off a little bit?
I would say 50-50.
Is it?
You know, yes. Individuals still associated with Lou Gehrig's disease, if they're still familiar with Lou Gehrig after all these years.
Right.
But then, you know, we had an incredible event that happened 2 years ago, and that was the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge.
Right.
Which, wow.
Was a phenomenon.
Yeah.
And that was a very organic event that occurred. And
how did that even start? Because I know that the deal was, you know, I challenge you to dump a bucket of ice cold water over your head, and some people were criticizing it, and I may have been one to say it, like, just give money to the ALS Foundation. But it did raise awareness. It totally worked as you wanted.
It raised a tremendous amount of awareness, not just nationally but internationally. It also assisted in funding. You know, $220 million was raised worldwide for the disease, which is really still a drop in the bucket when you look at disease-based organizations and research that can be done.
Yeah.
It cost around $1.5 billion to bring a treatment or a diagnosis, you know, to market. So
sure.
$220 million is awesome. I think the other side that we were really, really fortunate, this disease, as I mentioned, you lose your voice. And it wasn't a very well-recognized disease because it doesn't affect so many individuals.
Right.
So for a good 3 months, especially 1 month in August, we were the worldwide conversation. Everybody was talking about ALS. Everybody was going and learning about ALS.
Right.
Our organization was able to look at, you know, some of the back end metrics of things, and people were actually staying and learning about ALS when they went to the website. And what an awesome way to help.
That's what
honor,
you want.
Yeah, to help honor the folks who are living with the disease.
Julie Sharp is the executive director of ALS Association Greater Chicago Chapter, whom we're speaking to right now. Daniel Trout diagnosed with ALS. How long ago would you say?
The diagnosis was last month.
So this is all fresh to you.
It's very fresh.
And what can we do to help? How can we, the listeners or Bill and I, help? What's this event that's going on at Daly Plaza?
Well, we would love for you guys to come join us in Daly Plaza either this afternoon or tomorrow between the hours of 8 and 6 p.m. We're breaking through ALS. We really do believe that we're on the cusp of a breakthrough. It's an opportunity for individuals to come out and to hit a board, to empower those, to break through for a cure. Mm-hmm. To break through, to empower individuals. The ALS Ice Bucket Challenge was awesome because you dumped water on yourself or somebody dumped water on you.
Right.
This allows for individuals to harness their own inner power and to break through, to actually have a physical battle against their own disease,
yeah,
if you will.
Yep. Absolutely.
To break through. So we'd love to have you come out tomorrow to learn. We will be on site along with our boards, which you guys are going to take your own breakthrough here in a few moments.
Yeah, we're going to take a commercial break. Okay. We'll come back, give more details about this.
We're
and
good
find-
at commercial breaks. It's just the breaking of the board part that it hurts us.
Oh, so, oh.
Do you have back
pain? It's so
easy.
It's so empowering, right, and it's so right, easy. So thank
you'll
you.
Be able to do it, although I'm really hoping that you can't and I do.
That would
make
great.
My day wonderful.
Let's see if that happens. I'm afraid
we'll challenge
gonna
you guys. It's your own challenge. It's all your right, breakthrough ALS challenge.
And that's what you have to do. Breakthrough ALS. They need money. They need to come up with a cure. And research, of course, comes to that cure. ALS Association Greater Chicago Chapter invites you out to Daly Plaza today until 6 p.m., 50 West Washington. Tomorrow from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. You can go to ALSAChicago.org. We'll be back with Julie and Daniel next. It's 720 WGN. We're going to break through ALS right now. Julie Sharp is with us, the executive director of ALS Association Greater Chicago Chapter. Daniel Trout diagnosed with ALS very recently, just a couple of months ago. And thank you for your military tour in Afghanistan. You were there. We thank you. You were a cook there, and I wanted to ask what your specialty was.
Oh, my specialty.
Why is your fiance laughing at you?
She's laughing because she doesn't think I cook enough for her. But I'd say my favorite thing to make would be veal parmesan.
Oh,
look
nice
at that! Yeah.
That's a meal. Right
Are you
there.
Still able to cook? Are you still able to wheel up to the counter? Can you cook?
Right now, I'm at a point where I can't cook on my own, but actually through the VA, they're actually helping me get some adapted things like a cutting board where I can do stuff one-handed.
Good.
And then just different things to help around so I can help out.
And you were already, before you entered your tour of duty, were you already kind of a cook before then, or did you just pick that up while you were there?
That was something I picked up while in there.
Yeah.
But I had always liked cooking, but I was never a real big cook around
yeah,
the house.
Yeah.
Although you're not making veal parmesan and anything fancy when you were in the service. Wasn't it a lot of hot dogs and fried ham, fried bologna sandwiches?
No.
We just
no,
don't picture the military going, oh, veal parmesan again? I don't. It's hard to envision that.
Well, in the military, you're on like a 28-day cycle. So you have certain meals that you'll see a few times, but you're always cooking something different.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
All right, who wants to go first with this? So we're going to break through ALS. You want me to go
first? Ladies
first. You want me to break my hand
first? With everything,
don't you?
Yeah. If you make it, then I'll do it. If you get hurt, I'm not doing it.
All right. You have so many lovely assistants here today. Julie, I don't know if you want to hold it or if someone else wants to.
Oh, I'm happy to hold it.
Okay.
And there's some.
I've already been injured.
I don't want to say
trick to it.
Oh, she's
been injured.
Have you been injured doing this?
No,
I don't want to use the phrase trick to it, but there's something that you want to do to make sure that you get through unscathed, right?
There
what would it be?
Absolutely.
All right, you have to explain it in the microphone real quickly, and then I'm gonna break this board from here to the Chicago River.
Oh,
right. Absolutely. It's all about actually the way the board itself is held.
Yeah.
And then the way you impact it with the heel of your hand.
What did I tell you right before
it's
she
the heel
came
of the hand.
It's the
right down
hand.
Here,
absolutely.
The bottom of your palm, right?
And I have to just brace myself in a certain way and hold the board a certain way, and then you'll go
all right.
through it.
All right, Billy.
Are you supposed to yell like hiya or
oh,
something?
Yeah,
you're supposed
absolutely.
To yell hiya.
The more,
okay. Yell
the
hiya,
more yell,
Wendy.
The better. You right. know, and you're supposed to just see yourself like 6 inches through the board.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's all
right.
what you do.
Now, I took karate, so I have a little advantage here.
All right.
There you go.
All
but,
right.
Bill, you're going to have to do a play-by-play.
All right. Wendy is changing into a karate kimono. I don't know where it came from. She
it's
brought
called a gi.
A gi.
A gi?
Wendy's gi. All right, so now she's she's aiming at it with her... And, oh, man!
Ooh, thank you very much.
How did you do that? You broke it into a thousand split... You made toothpicks out of that board.
All right,
you
your turn,
Bill. You have a
thousand
toothpicks. I don't think I can do that.
Oh, come on.
All right, what was your word of choice? What did you yell?
Just yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Whatever
H-Y-A?
You want to yell.
Yeah? All right, I'll do that.
I envisioned your face on the board, Bill. We tease because we love. What?
So this part.
The heel of your hand. Like this. It's really thin. It's like a piece of paper. Bill is winding up.
He's addressing the board.
And push right through it. Just push with the heel of your hand.
Punch and yell.
Don't make your fingers like this. You're going to break your upper knuckles.
Just like this.
Just leave your fingers up.
Fingers up.
All right, he's going to hit it with the heel of his hand. You'll see. It's really, he's so competitive. On 100.
He's,
come on.
He is scared to death.
Show's over at 3.
There you go.
All right. Bill never swears, and he just mouths something, which I hope Dave Marzullo got on video, because that video will be up.
Oh, man.
That is the thinnest board I have ever seen in my life. Julie, thank you for bringing a
wow.
thin board up. We
oh,
totally
very,
appreciate
very
it.
You're welcome.
So if people want to help out, because research is how we find a cure for ALS, and how close are they coming?
Again,
they've made great strides. Please tell me that.
We have. I really believe that we are on the cusp of a breakthrough. The other thing that's really important is taking care of the individuals that are living with ALS. And that's one of the things that we focus on as our chapter two, is we provide care services. And the services that we do provide as a chapter, everything is provided at no cost to the
yeah.
families. And so when you do help support us, you do help support those that are living with the disease, as well as research, as well as us going and advocating on behalf of the families.
Daniel, good luck with everything, especially Saturday. The wedding day is an important day, and I want to have a talk with you privately afterwards to tell you what to expect that night, because it's a very big night in a man's life.
Although, thank Bill, you very much.
You played the part of the bride a little more than the bride
thank
did.
You for
so maybe,
reminding me, right. Maybe Wendy should have that talk with you.
And what is your fiancé's name again?
Amanda.
Amanda, maybe Bill should have the talk with you.
Yeah, that'll
it'll
be
work out better.
That would be better for
We were talking off the air. You guys don't live far from the Arcata Theater in St. Charles. And why don't you go to oshows.com and decide a show you want to go see, and we'll set you up for a little wedding gift. I wish we could give you more. But when you come back from your honeymoon, any kind of rock and roll show, we would like to set you up.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome very much.
Best of luck to you.
Thank you all
thank
so
you.
Much.
Thank you. Okay, you can go to ALSA.chicago.org. That stands for ALS Association. Greater Chicago Chapter. Julie Sharp is their executive director. And Daniel Trout, best of luck. Happy nuptials. Thank you so much for coming up.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
A quick break. Steve with the news, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Bill, you and I have a job, which is good. At least today we do.
Yes. So true.
We'll keep our fingers crossed. But I know my son's a junior, so he has finals this week. The seniors in his high school are already out and about, and they're going to school.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them going to go to college. Some of them are going to look for jobs. But how do you get a job? We're here to help. Actually, we're not, but we have Dr. Tracy Weiland on the line with us. Dr. Tracy, you're a career expert, and you are a visiting scholar, Stanford University Media, former Silicon Valley executive. you have 11 books in your arsenal, and you're going to help some of the people listening get jobs, aren't you?
I'm going to try. I certainly would like to see people employed.
Yeah, so would people listening who can't find a job. So writing a resume is a very important part of... I don't think I have an up-to-date resume. Do you, Bill?
No. And if anyone needs them, it's you and me. We should have them ready at all time. But Dr. Weiland, the problem is if you're a kid, if you're finishing up school and going into the job market, your resume isn't going to have a whole lot on it, is it?
Well, it can. And actually, I think students really need to think creatively about all their experiences in college, their internships, their summer jobs, the teams and the groups that they've belonged to, the volunteer work that they've done, and really package that into a powerful one-page resume that would catch a hiring manager's attention, because they can make it look like they like it's a real experience and job, because it is.
You say one-page resume. Is it a no-no to go beyond that?
If you're a student, you really don't have enough experience to really go beyond the one page. And I even tell adults who are seasoned to keep it to 2 pages, because in reality, when recruiters and hiring managers are quickly looking for experience, skills, and education, they're going to look at the first page. And today we have software systems that also just really focus in on the first page. So you view it as a valuable piece of real estate. It is your press release about yourself, so pull out the salient experiences, skills, and that you have relative to the job that you're trying to apply for.
It's standard with somebody who's a little older when you're submitting a resume to also have a cover letter. That's your standard 2 sheets, one cover letter, one resume. Is it the same thing with a kid who's coming out of school?
Yeah, so here's the cover letter. You know, I would keep it short, but what it means to the employer or the recruiter is that you actually read the job description, because you're going to customize that cover letter and make it powerful, shorten to the point of why you're the best candidate for the position you're applying for. I think people go generic, and that's a problem. So you want to really show the employer that you care enough to read the job description and give clear examples of why you're the perfect fit.
All right, and I'm thinking of summer jobs. I can only go with what my kid does. I have a teenager who works at a guitar shop, and he's learning how to run it. He's learning how to restring instruments. There are other kids that I know that caddy, other people who are a server at a restaurant or something. How do you turn that around to make it sound bigger and more important than it is?
Sure, and I think that all of those things are actually very good jobs. So your son is in the music industry and is working in customer service and also has hands-on experience with a lot of the instruments. Some of the other jobs you mentioned, for example, if someone worked at Walmart or The Gap, well, they're in the retail industry, so they understand that. If somebody was doing, you know, phone calls for one of the political campaigns, well, they're in telemarketing. If you're working at McDonald's or Starbucks, you're in the food and beverage industry. And, you know, more importantly, tell me what you did there that created new opportunities for the employer. Did you increase sales? Did you increase customer satisfaction? Did you decrease costs for the music store? Really try to package it and show that you really took initiative in that job. And no job is mundane, and every job you should figure out how to make that count.
So the key is really in the wording, right? You want to make the wording as impressive as you possibly can at every turn.
You want to make that wording translate so that someone who's in business can understand what you're doing. So I am in customer service in the retail industry, and I serviced over 200 customers, and I increased sales for our store, along with team members, you know, by 10%. I can understand that as a hiring manager. I don't care if you were working part-time at Walmart or The Gap. You created results. So results, metrics, percentages, and dollar signs really catch attention.
All right, and you're not really lying, but it does seem like you should kind of exaggerate like what you've done to make it sound bigger, or do you have to be really careful of that?
No, you have to be careful. It's the terminology that you use. If you just write down and say, I worked at Walmart, then it doesn't tell me anything except that you worked at a store. But if you really explain to me some of the activities that you did at Walmart, And maybe you even got a customer satisfaction rating that, you know, of a 5.0 or something that really helps you stand out. I can understand that as a hiring manager, that you're, whatever you did there, you're going to bring into my company, and that's what I want. So I think it's more about terminology, not lying, but really translating, you know, your activities into real jobs. And you can look for examples, by the way, you know, on websites. And, by the way, there are many websites just for students today. Unlike the past, we had to go to the regular job boards, but today you can go to internships.com, Career Rookie, College Recruiter. Oh, my goodness, there's thousands of them. And every company has sections on their websites just dedicated to students who are in school, students who are graduating, and even students who have certain majors. And so I think it's important that students know exactly where to look so that they can understand, you know, how to frame themselves for an employer.
Dr. Tracy Weiland on the line with us. You can go to her website, Tracy with an E, so TRACEY and then Weiland, WILEN.com.
There was a time, Tracy, where at the bottom of pretty much every resume, it would say references available upon request. Now, I've heard other people in similar jobs to yours say those are the most wasted words on any resume, because every job knows that if we really needed a reference, we could get one. Do you bother to put that or not?
Yeah, so Jeffrey, I agree with that. You know, it's a valuable piece of real estate. You got one page. I know I'm going to find your references. I'm going to find out everything about you before I hire you, because I can do background checks and drug tests and financial tests. And so I would not use that. And besides, you might want a different reference for a different job.
Yeah, yeah.
What about these websites, like, I can't think of the name right now, but like Job
Builder or
yeah,
something?
Things like yeah. that. Is that a good way to apply for a job, or is the old school way still best, where you reach out, you find out who's in charge of it, and reach out to them directly?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of, you know, number one, networking is still how people get jobs. 65 to 75% of people get jobs that way. If you're a student, ask your parents, ask your neighbors, ask your friends and family, you know, use all the paths for to help you get a job. And number two is if you're out there and you see the name of a hiring manager, cold call them. Pick up the phone, call that manager, or send them an email. Why would you wait to send in a resume with hundreds of other people? Show some initiative that you really are the right person for that job, so much so you want to call them and get an appointment with them on the phone or in person.
What's the right amount of time to wait before sending some sort of a follow-up?
Okay, so the rule of thumb is usually, you know, I would wait 10 days to 14 days and check in if you haven't heard. Unless you had, like, a phenomenal response, then I would do it in 7 days.
Yeah.
If after that you don't hear back, keep moving. Keep moving and keep looking for other jobs, because there is a black hole there, because you are competing with many people today for jobs. You know, a recruiter or hiring manager is going through hundreds of resumes, and, you know, if you didn't make the cut, you know, as they say, they're always looking for a reason not to hire you. So that's why your resume has to be the one that stands out. And also remember, a resume doesn't get you the job, it gets you the interview.
Right.
So if you frame your mindset around, how am I going to get this resume to rise to the top compared to 100 or 200 other resumes, focus on that. Even if you just send out one a day to a perfect job match for yourself, that's what you should be thinking about.
Dr. Tracy Weiland on the line with us. A quick question before we let you go. You said the resume doesn't get you the job, but it gets you the interview. Is it okay to use humor or be a little offbeat on your resume or cover letter?
I would not, and I'll tell you why. Because if I am a hiring manager or recruiter, and let's say I'm looking through LinkedIn and sorting through resumes, I might be using software to help me sort through. Looking for keywords, you know, education, major, experience, skills. Software does not have a sense of humor, right? It's this is a real serious activity I'm doing. I'm trying to get a good candidate for a job. Humor doesn't really play out well. If you get into an interview, and remember, you know, my first job, it took me 100 interviews, 100 resume send-outs to actually get to an interview.
Oh, my God.
Right. And
so don't give up, kids.
Right. Well, when you get there, take that interview very, very seriously, because you're compared to a lot of people. That was really hard for you to get to that spot. Take that very seriously, and I would not joke around with your job or your career.
When do you start to discuss money?
after you get an offer, or if they ask you what your, you know, expectations are, and research it. There's no reason why you should not know what a job is worth. You can look on salary.com, glassdoor.com, look at the recruiting sites, look at the job boards, and you can get an idea of what job should be paying. But I'm telling you, if it's your first job, you know, you just want to get the job.
Right,
and
sure.
I don't think you're going to have negotiating room there. If you're a more seasoned adult, do a lot of research and talk to recruiters also about what's the appropriate salary range and hiring bonuses and all of those extras that you should be thinking about, but do not go in unprepared.
I'll tell you, man, the internet has made life so much easier for trying to figure out a salary for this particular job. You can really find out a lot of information. And would you agree with this statement, Dr. Tracy Weiland? If you're in an interview and you kind of know right from the get-go, like, I don't like this manager, I don't think this company's for me, shouldn't you just follow the motions and go through it, because every interview makes you better for the next one?
A couple of things, yes. Every interview will make you better for the next one, and then you use that as a practice interview on questions, watching body language, and different things. But remember, if you're not a fit for that job, that manager might refer you to another manager who has a completely different job, and you might be a better fit for that. So I would go through the motions, and I would follow up appropriately. And if you got an offer and it wasn't a good fit, you know, I would talk to them about it. You really like the company, but that particular job wasn't the right fit. Are there other places that, you know, or other people that they could refer you to?
Tracy, would you hire Wendy and I based on what you've heard today?
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
Send me your resume.
Yes, done.
We
it's
don't
already
have
sent.
One.
It's already sent.
Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Tracy Weiland. W-I-L-E-N is the last name. And you can go to TracyWeiland.com. All your books are there. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
She said she'd hire us.
She was being nice.
She was just being nice. We'll take a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. I broke a wooden board today, Wendy, and I didn't think I'd be able to.
Bill.
I knew my money was on you. I thought Wendy's going to be able to do this. She's classically trained as a martial artist.
Oh, I'm not. I'll tell you, I love Shotokan karate, and I would continue doing it if my knees wouldn't give up
on
me.
How many years did you do it?
The kids started doing it, and I did it. I got 4 belt levels.
That's pretty good.
Whatever that is.
That's pretty good.
There's white.
Yeah.
Yellow, green, orange, I think.
And new blue diamonds. I might be thinking of breakfast cereal.
Maybe.
It might be.
But I will tell you, this is not much bigger than a toothpick.
But yeah. But still, it's the biggest board I've broken today. Who knows what the rest of the day will bring. But when she showed me the wood plank, I'm like, I'm not positive I can get through this. I knew you'd get through it. I didn't think I could, but we both did. We should become ninjas. When do ninjas usually hire? What time of year are they usually hiring ninjas?
I don't know.
The fall?
What do you put your resume on? A broken board?
Yeah, just to show them.
I think that
this
would
is
be
one
a
of
good
the
idea.
Many boards I've broken over the years as a ninja.
All right, well, I have to get out of here because I have to go get a physical, and I have to tell you that my doctor looks like Murr from Impractical Jokers, so this is going to be hard getting through it.
Try not to think about that during your physical.
I can't not think about it. Seriously, it's pretty bizarre.
Don't you pick doctors based on which cable characters they look like?
Maybe.
That's weird. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Roe and Ann will come in. We'll find out what they have coming up next. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.